Hey, before we get to today's episode about Resident Evil 2 Remake, we've got some news from Backlog Land. This week, I'm making a guest appearance on the Nostalgium Arcanum podcast to talk about Happy Gilmore and Adam Sandler's 90s run. Once again, that's the Nostalgium Arcanum podcast, not Nostalgia, Nostalgium Arcanum. Go check that out. It's a good time. Also, coming up in a couple weeks at PAX East, I will be part of a panel. The panel is called Between Two Screens, a Nintendo DS retrospective, where I'll be joining five other wonderful panelists to do a little retrospective history about the Nintendo DS and then put together an essential list of the best 20 games from the system. That panel is on Sunday, March 24th at 12:30 p.m. in the Albatross Theater, or if you can't make it to PAX, you can watch online at twitch.tv/PAX2. That's twitch.tv/PAX2. Please check that out. That's going to be a good time. I'm super excited to do it. And as always, I would like to thank the wonderful patrons who make this show possible. These personal heroes of mine are Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast Crew, Zulgeek, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt, aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., and many more. These fine folks have gone to patreon.com/realdavejackson to kick a few bucks a month my way and help support the show. Their support is always appreciated. And with all that being said, X gon' give it to ya. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. My two wonderful guests today are friends of the show. First up, we've got one of the hosts on Super Ghost Radio. He's actually two podcasters in a trench coat and a top hat. Jerry is back. Welcome back, Jerry.
Heyo! I'm super happy to be back on this, man.
Yeah, absolutely. People who were listening back in October 2023 probably heard one of our more popular episodes of the show where we talked about how people get into horror games, and Jerry was on that episode. So we're back with another horror game talking today. Real excited for this.
I don't take any credit for that, though.
You should take all the credit, my man. The other guest today is a returning guest to the show, one of the hosts on Friday Night Gamecast, and this guy can lift a helicopter with his bare hands, Nick. Welcome back, Nick.
Dave, thank you so much for having me back on. I'm really excited for this. And Jerry, thank you so much for sharing the spotlight with me on this one. I'm really excited to get into this with you guys. Man.
Yeah, this is going to be good. Nick's been on the show a few times before, along with his Friday Night Gamecast co-host, Will. We talked about Prey, and we talked about Redfall. That's right.
That's the infamous Redfall.
That's the Will?
Yeah.
That's the one you made play that terrible, terrible game?
Oh, he didn't make him. He would have done it anyway.
Yeah. He went above and beyond the Call of Duty. We'll just say
he sure
that.
Did.
Yeah.
He sure did.
Shout out to Will.
Is he still alive?
He's alive and well, yeah. Today, we're going to talk about Resident Evil 2 Remake, which is a survival horror game developed and published by Capcom in 2019. Resident Evil 2 Remake, as you can probably guess, is a remake of Resident Evil 2, which originally released in 1998. This is the fourth Resident Evil episode on the show so far, following Resident Evil 4 original, then the RE4 remake, and last October, the Resident Evil 1 remake from the GameCube. So getting on the series, I guess. I guess I'm a fan. I guess I'm playing through these, huh? So we're doing number two today. If you have not played Resident Evil 2 Remake, here's the spoiler policy for the episode. Per usual, we are going to avoid spoiling the story and talking shop too much, you know, specific boss fights and stuff like that in the non-spoiler part. Down in the show notes, you'll find a timestamp for when the spoilers begin. You can tap out at that time if you don't want to be spoiled. And then after that time, full spoiler talk. We'll get into it there. So let's get the elevator pitches in for Resident Evil 2 Remake. My elevator pitch is, at this point, Capcom just kind of really has this remake thing figured out, huh? Like, that's the pitch. If you like Resident Evil 2, they do remakes really well. Jump in. Jerry, what's your elevator pitch?
I don't say this normally, but this is a remake that, in my opinion, completely negates the original.
Mm-hmm. Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
I know. Go. Pretty big words. Praise.
Yeah. And Nick, what's the elevator pitch?
Okay, so my elevator pitch for this title is going to be, hey kids, want to play the scariest Resident Evil game in the franchise? And do you also want to play the biggest Chad rookie cop ever? As well as like the most well-trained college student you've ever seen in the world? Well, do I have the game for you? It's called Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Absolutely. Scariest game in the series. We'll talk about that later. I always thought 7 was the consensus scariest one.
Yeah.
I know definitely. We just met, but I will fight you on this.
I'm excited. Let's dig into it.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely have a section set aside for that, being a horror game and all. I played this on PC, and this game is split up into two routes. You do one character, then you can do the other character's route. I did both of those. It took me about 15 hours total to do both. Does that sound about right to you guys?
15 for both?
Yeah, that's really fast, Dave. I think, well, for your
fast?
To me, I think that's fast for your first time ever playing this game. You're also like a really good gamer, Dave. Like, I don't know if you know that about yourself, but you're incredibly talented at video games, I think, personally.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do play a lot of video games.
Yeah.
We'll just say that.
Are you actually let me solo her? Are you him?
Yeah, exactly. So for my playthrough in Resident Evil 2, the first time I played it in 2019, I picked apart this game. I combed through it on my Leon A route, and that took me around 25 to 28 hours. And then so this time when I played my Claire B route, I did it completely differently, and we can dig into that a little bit later when we get into the gameplay section on how we approached this game. But that took me 3 hours. So all together, everything all said and done, it's about 30 for me.
Okay.
I think I was a little less. I think total time, maybe like 25 hours for both runs. Mm-hmm.
All right, fair enough. I guess now that you guys mention it, I did spend a lot of time like running past stuff and not doing a whole lot of optional stuff. We'll talk about why when we dig into the game here. So I guess I did kind of like speed through, especially the B route when I already kind of knew where to go and stuff like that. So yeah, I might be on the faster end there at 15 hours then. Let's talk about our histories with Resident Evil, the series, and then with this game in particular. Jerry, I'll kick to you first, since you were already on that horror games episode. We talked a lot about Resident Evil there. Refresh everybody's memory about your history with this series and then with RE2 Remake in particular.
So I can't remember if I told this story on your podcast or if it was on my podcast or if maybe I just didn't tell anybody about this, but there's two situations where I rented video games from the video store and then immediately walked them back to the video store. Uh-huh. One was Nightmare Creatures, and I think that might have been the one I talked about on the last show that I did with you. But I also did that with Resident Evil 2 as well.
Okay.
I remember going and renting it, and I brought it home, and I pop it in. And I think it was within seeing the liquor for the first time. Like, mm-hmm. It was already pretty tense, like, immediately starting this game up and just being like, oh, shit. Like, there's zombies everywhere. Everything's on fire. Because, of course, I picked Leon. And, you know, because I can't remember if in the original, if you start as Claire, if it actually is different. I can't remember. But, yeah, you start as, if you pick Leon, you start off in the normal area where there's zombies and everything's on fire. Dude aims a shotgun at you. I didn't know what the hell was going on. But within getting to the police station and then seeing the liquor like crawl across the window, I just went, nope, I don't think so. I think I'm out of this one. And I marched that thing back to the video store. And it was a good long time before I actually picked it up again.
Mm-hmm.
But fast forward to I'm in my teens and I actually finally start to
you know, not be a scaredy cat and play these kinds of games. And there was a friend of mine that was playing it at the same time. And at this point, I had been playing it on PS1. And I was on the phone with my friend, and we were just so happened talking about the liquors. And my friend was shit baked. He was like, dude, I'm so scared. I was like, dude, okay, listen, it's these liquors. You got to stay away from the liquor. Okay. Like, don't go near it. Like, you're going to have to like kind of skirt around the liquor. My dad busts in my room and he's like, I caught you red handed. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, hang up the phone right now. I'm like, dude, Cody, I got to go, man. So I hang up. I'm like, what am I in trouble for? He's like, I knew you were drinking. You're trying to line it up with your friend. You're talking about liquor. You're talking about like skirting around, getting some liquor. And I was like, no, I'm just a dork. I'm not even drinking. I'm just playing video games. And I'm talking to my friend.
I'm a nerd.
Yeah, I promise. I'm just a nerd, dude. So I got in trouble. I got, accused of lining up to go out drinking with some friends when in actuality, I was just talking about the stupid liquor. So the liquor, I guess, kind of screwed me over twice.
Yeah,
twice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a shame that you could have like pointed at the screen and been like, see, do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not talking about alcohol here. It's just the skinless monsters. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
So did you play the RE2 remake like right when it came out then? Were you all about it?
Oh, it was day one because once I gained the courage to play Resident Evil 2, I feel like Resident Evil 2 might have been the first horror game that I actually had the courage to play and mm-hmm. finish. But that wasn't until I was, the Resident Evil 2 came out for N64, I think in 98. And I think I was like, I must have been in like grade 8 or 9. Which would have been around 2001 or two before I actually ended up playing it. And I think it was the first one. So ever since then, as soon as I beat 2, I was like, oh, I gotta find the first one. And then I didn't realize at that time, I believe 3 had already been out. So I just started buying these games. Like, I was all in on Resident Evil. So of course, when Resident Evil 2 remake gets announced, I'm like, this is insane. I cannot believe that they did this. But then I don't know if you guys remember, they announced that thing in like 2016. Like, it was a while before they actually showed anything on it. And then finally we got it in, what was that, 2018? 2019?
I think 2019, yeah.
At the top of this, yeah. But yeah, I was all in. I had it pre-ordered. Like, I was all in. Like, it was nice. It was something I had to play.
Nice, nice. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, so, Dave, I think our histories with Resident Evil and the Resident Evil franchise may be pretty similar for the most part. I started off Resident Evil pretty late in my career as a gamer. I was always very timid of horror games when I was younger, like, you know, 8, 9, and 10. I knew enough about myself and I had seen enough horror movies at that point that my experience with horror games, I was like, I can't do this. I watched a friend play Resident Evil 1, you know, on the GameCube at that time, and even then gave me cold sweats down my back. So I was always very timid of this franchise as a whole. So naturally, the first game I actually really played for, you know, extended period, and I didn't complete it, but I put a good amount of hours in, was Resident Evil 5, because that was billed as the biggest action game in the Resident Evil franchise. And it turns out everybody was right. It really wasn't as scary. They were very much leaning towards, you know, Chris being that typical 80s, 90s movie action hero. And so I did jump into that, had a good amount of fun with it. It was a very Looney Tune Resident Evil. And I didn't understand anything that was going on other than shoot the zombie, do the thing and go through the levels. Watch like the border. I had no clue what I was doing, but you know, I had a good amount of fun with it. And before I just put it down, I didn't even finish it. And it wasn't really until years later when I started paying much closer attention to the video games industry in general. And then Resident Evil 2 Remake dropped in 2019 and got absolutely glowing reviews from people and journalists in the industry that I was following, as well as just like some personal friends that were like, Nick, this game is amazing. You have to play this. This is a must play. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And I put it on my backlog and then jumped into it later that year in 2019 when I had a little bit more time. And I was just blown away by the quality and how incredible this game felt and played and looked on all fronts. I was just like back to back. I was astonished. I had never played anything like it. And so from that point, very similar to what Jerry was saying, I was hooked. I immediately bought Resident Evil 3 Remake day one when it came out. And I've been slowly parsing through the mainline series as I go along. You know, I jumped, you know, right into 7 after that. I phased out of 7 for various reasons. But yeah, loved Resident Evil 3 Remake. I got peer pressured into doing the Resident Evil 4 OG on Steam and then did a review on that and then played in Resident Evil 4 Remake. And that turned out to be my game of the year for 2023.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's, you know, I have plans, designs on going back to one based on Dave's and Adelaide's review on the show for Tales from the Backlog. And then I also got 1 and 0 in a pack. It was like a discount pack on Steam. And then I also bought 8 on PS5. So I'm really excited to jump into those as well.
Shit, you're all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever go back and try the original RE2 at all?
No, and honestly, I do feel a little bit saddened about that. I felt like I have seen gameplay footage of it, and I just feel like it might be a little bit too far for me to go back and try. Like, RE4 was a stretch for me to play, and that game is incredible by itself. Like, it's still an excellent example of an incredible retro title that you can go back and play at this point. But Resident Evil 2 and 3 are just, I think they just might be too far back. And I'm sad that I didn't play it when I was younger. I didn't have like an older brother or a sibling to be like, hey, look, this is how you go and do that. Cause I feel like I just missed out on that way. I guess I could go back, but I don't know if I will.
Yeah. I stand by what I said earlier. I think the remake completely negates the original. I think the only reason why anybody would go back and play the original is if you have nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
It's not a bad game. It's just that 2 is so damn good that it's just like, I mean, why would you?
Yeah. I've heard different arguments and cases for playing Resident Evil 3 because there's just so much that they stripped from the remake. But I'm not sure I'm that interested in like the history of the franchise that much.
So I would almost argue the opposite for Resident Evil 3 Remake. I would say play the remake probably after you do the original, because the original still is really cool.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
And 3 Remake is not a bad game, but like, it's, for one thing, it's very short. They've left out a couple of really cool moments that I would have rather have seen in that game. And Nemesis is kind of just a pushover after you, like, the first few encounters with him are like pretty intense, but like after playing the game for like 2 hours, you're just like, dude, get out of here. Like, I'm tired of seeing you and your stupid face.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love Jill so much in that game. She's just such a strong character. And that's something I love about Capcom and what they've done with this like series in general. It's just like full of strong female characters. You can't be beat.
For my personal history with the series and this game, I never played the original RE2. I had an N64, but there was no way I was buying Resident Evil games for the N64. I was just not into horror media at all. And then like as a teenager, I got into horror movies, but not games at all. So I never played the original RE2. My first Resident Evil game was RE4 just a couple years ago, the original. Played that. And then I loved that. I played RE4 Remake and I loved that. So then I played the RE1 Remake and I loved that. And I kind of like got a sense of Capcom's like approach to making these remakes. And so it was just kind of like, oh yeah, like they're just hitting home runs on all of these that I've played so far. So then I bought a double pack on Steam with this RE2 Remake and then RE3 Remake also. So I'm kind of like working my way through the series now. Like I have really liked all of them that I've played. I went back and I played a little bit of the original RE1 for shout out to Retro Hangover Podcast for the upcoming King of Games 1996. Resident Evil 1 is part of that tournament. It's a big tournament matching up all the best games from 1996 to come out with, you know, what is the King of Games in 1996. So I did try out the original RE1 for that. Didn't love it, but I could see what's there. You know, it's kind of like you said, Nick, like the tank controls and all of that. It is just a little bit too much for me to go back to at this point. The other thing for RE2, that drew me in was, like I said, RE4 was my introduction, and this was the intro to Leon. So like, I wanted to see Leon's origins as just a very fun video game character. And to get some quick opening thoughts before we dive fully into the episode, I think this game is really good. I really appreciate, like, I've seen videos of the original RE2. So like, I really like how they transformed this into a big explorable 3D space. Like, I love the setting of it. I like the characters. There's some stuff about this that I don't really like, some big stuff about this. So RE4 is still king in my eyes. I think I just like the more action-oriented approach to RE4 compared to this, as more, you know, conserve your ammo, survival horror type stuff. But we'll get into all of that. Like, I have some stuff that, like, I see why it's good for the game, but I don't like it when I play it. So it's not like me saying that this is a bad decision that they made. It's just personal preference, mostly. Anytime anyone is like, RE2 remake, one of the best games ever made, all of that, like, I'll be like, yeah, sure, I see it. I totally get it. This game's really good.
So you said that you went back and played Resident Evil 1, correct?
Yeah.
The PS1 version, right?
Yes.
Have you played the GameCube one?
Yeah, I did that. That was on Tales from the Backlog back in October 2023. Yeah.
Okay.
And I love that.
So I consider Resident Evil 2 to be the best Resident Evil. Then it's Resident Evil 4, and it's kind of like a toss-up between Resident Evil 4 Remake and the original. I can't decide which one I like more. Mm-hmm. And then it's Resident Evil 1, the remake on GameCube. That game
is great.
As far as I'm concerned, it's flawless.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil 2 Remake, 100%, prior to me playing RE4 Remake last year, I think, for various reasons, was my favorite in the franchise. And I think it combines everything that you want in a survival horror video game, personally. I think it's the perfect example of what most survival horror fans want. It blends combat and puzzles, gameplay, traversal. All of these different things are just kind of in this very, very neat and organized package. And I really, really love how archetypal this game is, too. I feel like it's going to be something that we might address here later, but some people look at it as a little bit samey, but I just love the setting and how procedural it goes from each of the settings, whether it's RPD or the later areas that kind of Leon and Claire, you know, delve deeper into as you go throughout this game. I love the way that this game makes me feel as I'm playing it, the intensity. And, you know, I would say that this is not a game where you're going to jump into and really expect any type of mind bending or thought provoking narrative, but I really love the character writing and I love the character interactions that they have here. And I think that it really overall contributes to the Resident Evil lore as a whole and kind of just let me, like, very much thirsty for more, wanting to know more about these characters. And I think that's probably why it's one of my favorites.
100% agree.
All right. So let us listen to a little bit of music from the Resident Evil 2 Remake. And when we come back, we will set up the story. In Resident Evil 2 Remake, the game is set a couple months after the events of Resident Evil 1. At the beginning of the game, you choose to play as rookie Raccoon City police officer Leon Kennedy, voiced by Nick Apostolides, or Claire Redfield, voiced by Stephanie Panicello. Whoever you don't pick, you can play their side of the story after you finish the first half. So it's not really like, you know, you're not going to miss out on anything based on who you pick. And frankly, like, I was actually kind of more disappointed that the two playthroughs are as similar as they are. I was hoping they would be a little bit more different. There are differences. You go to different places, you interact with different characters, but a large portion of it is like the same level, the same puzzles, stuff like that. So it's not a real we'll just say, like, when you're making that choice, don't stress about who you pick. So I did Leon first, which I hear is like, I can't get a straight answer from people, like whether that whether there's a canon one or whether there's like a best one to do first. More people told me to do Claire first, but it was after I had already started.
Interesting. Yeah, I would say that I feel like personally in my headcanon, at the very least, I don't know what people, you know, the Resident Evil nerds out there would take away, but I feel like Leon A and Claire B is the correct way to go. That's my that's my takeaway. Yeah. That's how I did it. I would be really interested. I don't know, Jerry, if you've done Claire A, Leon B in Resident Evil 2 Remake.
No, that doesn't even sound right to me for some reason. Like, I just feel like, okay, hear me out. I think this is Leon's story more than it is Claire's. I think Claire is a great supporting actress in the story, and her character is very awesome. Like, excellent character, but I feel like this is Leon's story.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Which is too bad, because Claire's only main story that she got was Code Veronica, and that's not a very good game.
That's what I've heard. I've heard people kind of clambering for Capcom to kind of like wait on Resident Evil 5 and remake Code Veronica instead, so that people can get a better version of that. But I kind of see what you mean when you say that this feels like Leon's story. Leon's a rookie police officer. He's out. He's supposed to go to the office for his first day. On the way to Raccoon City, he stops at a gas station, and the gas station's full of zombies. The zombies attack. It has this great intro scene where you like go into like the back room in the gas station, and people are zombified and they attack, and Claire shows up. Like, she pulls up and you escape the gas station. You go to the Raccoon City Police HQ, but the streets are overrun with zombies there too. There's this weird cutscene at the beginning where this truck driver is eating a burger, like real gross, like.
And oh, that truck, it's such a good burger, back. Though. It looks like such a tasty burger, honestly.
it's a big one. It looks good. I'm into it. Maybe not when I'm driving, but hey, he's a truck driver. He's got to do what you got to do. Yeah. He gets bit by a zombie, and then he comes into the streets out of control. He rams his truck into a bunch of parked cars. There's an explosion. Leon and Claire get separated. And so Leon goes in the police station. Claire has to go elsewhere. And then the point, I guess, for the original part of the game is Leon's going to go in the police station, figure out what's going on, and then try to meet up with Claire again. And that's kind of like the setup for the story. This is a Resident Evil game, so like, the story itself, I was going to say you can probably guess where it's going. I don't think you can. Resident Evil stories are too fucking weird. You don't know exactly where it's going, but you do learn about like what's going on with the zombies. You learn about what's going on with some of the enemies you're going to meet. And you will kind of get the backstory on how things played out in the police station, because you'll spend a ton of time in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm now realizing that all of the events of Resident Evil 2 stem from this stupid, dumb, dumb idiot and his stupid fat burger.
Yeah. Well, they were going to get there eventually, but
but he made things a little more complicated.
Sure, yeah, that's did. Right.
He sure did. I kind of love that. I really loved it. I loved the introductory sequence of this game. I liked how the city was on fire. It's raining and it looks beautiful as soon as Leon kind of, he becomes playable and you're making your way through the crowd. You know, it's fun. A little bit of a, you know, tidbit on my history with actually starting this game. The first time I ever played it was on a friend's PS4 during a party. It was the middle of a party. There were like 20 people in his, like, you know, two bedroom apartment, and everybody was like drinking. And, you know, my buddy Logan was like, "Nick, have you played Resident Evil 2 Remake yet?" And I was like, "No." And he handed me the controller and turned it on in the middle of all of this chaos going on around us. And then like three or four people started turning around and watching me play. And it's so funny because I had never played this game before. I had no idea what I was supposed to do. I thought I could like brush up against zombies or push them over or run around. And I immediately get Leon's neck like torn off, and everybody's laughing and yelling at me in this party. And so it was just, yeah, that's a really good time. But that that intro sequence really is something else. I kind of love the intensity and how Leon makes it there, and he gets in and he like slams the gate closed, and it's just like, and then you see the outline of RPD before you go in. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the mocap and the acting and everything in the game, like, and like it just immediately is eye catching. Like mm-hmm. the second you turn the game on, you're just like, oh shit,
yeah,
Capcom done did it again. Like, this is crazy.
Right.
Especially like put yourself in, and I know that there are mainline games that came out between the RE1 remake, and that was like 2002, and then the RE2 remake in 2019. And I know that like the mainline games kept coming out during that time, but like put yourself in the shoes of someone who played the original RE2 and then you turn this on. And like you said, Jerry, like it's beautiful. It's a really good looking game. The acting, the mocap, the facial capture, all of that looks great. So seeing that brought to life from, you know, the original PlayStation or N64 must have been great.
Well, that's why I keep saying, and I stand by it, that this remake negates the original in a lot of ways. And a lot of that is because we kind of had this conversation when we did the anti-game of the year when we were talking about Resident Evil 4. Because, like, we kind of couldn't decide, like, is Resident Evil 4 Classic is still worth going back and seeing. Like, it's not Resident Evil, the new Resident Evil 4 does not negate the original, really. Not as much as this, because Resident Evil 2 Remake is a different game. This is like,
it is, yeah.
It's completely different. Whereas Resident Evil 4 was like just kind of like a reimagining and tweaking and just kind of like making things a little better, better looking, better playing, like, better everything. But like Resident Evil 2 Remake is just a different game, and it just took an already really, really damn good game and just made it, in my opinion, perfect. It's one of the few games that I will say would earn a perfect score for me if I was some kind of gaming journalist, if you will. I would give it a 5 out of 5 or a, you know, 10 out of 10. It there's nothing in this game that I can go, yeah, I didn't really care for that enough for me to go, it deserves to lose quote unquote points for that.
Yeah. 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 So, this game real quick also introduces, Ada Wong. I guess, well, I don't know if she's in a game that's like canonically before the story of this, but
no, this is her introduction.
This is her introduction. Okay. So Ada Wong, voiced in this game by Jolene Anderson. This is her introduction. You meet her through, Leon's story. And she plays a pretty big part in the story after that. We'll talk about that in the spoiler section, but just wanted to get your thoughts, guys, on the story of RE2, the remake here.
Yeah, I really like this story. I think kind of I brushed on that in terms of my opening thoughts, but I really, really loved, and I'm so glad that you kind of approached this game, Dave, with the idea of like, hey, I want to learn about like where Leon came from. Because I think that some people can approach this game and think, oh, well, both Leon and Claire are a little bit flat. They're a little bit, you know, not dimensional. But after playing this game and like paying close attention to the acting and the framing and the way that these actors kind of delivered their lines as you go throughout the story, you realize how earnest Leon is and how much, you have even more of an appreciation, or at least I had even more of an appreciation to see the contrast in his personality between, him being kind of this grizzled, bittered, like military war veteran in Resident Evil 4 versus now when he's kind of a young man, probably fresh in his 20s, just graduated the academy and his first posting was supposed to be RPD. And then he comes into it in the situation. And there are several times as you go throughout this game, particularly, you know, when he's interacting with some later characters that we might have to address in the spoiler wall. But, you know, you realize that Leon really is trying to do the right thing here. And then you kind of slowly see his and Ada's dynamic change as it goes on because of her behavior and her choices and the way that it takes it. And it was so interesting seeing Claire kind of have the same thing. Claire, I look at also, though, as much more of just this iconic stoic character. Like I said before, strong female protagonist. I got so much more of her being a badass as you get later on in this game. And this is very similar to Ashley's arc in Resident Evil 4 Remake as well, where it's like she's thrust into the situation and you can tell that at some point along the lines, I think the audience is just led to assume that Claire was trained by Chris at some point in how to use a gun and how to shoot and do something, because she's doing crazy stuff that you would have never imagined someone of her age demographic being able to do. But she's definitely handling herself in a way that you wouldn't expect. And I really, really appreciated it. Not to mention some of the intense elements of the perspective switch that Capcom gives us as we get later on to the later levels of this game. The body horror elements that they implement here, and then obviously more of the sci-fi horror elements. I love all of that, and I really like how they packaged that, and it felt like playing a movie. Not the same way that people think of playing Sony first party titles, but it just felt like in the back of my mind, everything is familiar. Everything is kind of nostalgic, even though I've never played this game before. I think that's why what I love the most about this.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, yeah, like I totally agree with that. It feels like this big summer blockbuster movie that would end up being in theaters and just being like, everybody's going to see this. People are going to see it twice.
Yeah.
Like this is that it's got that feel of like, oh my God, man, like everything about this is just like the one liner's good, but like also like just the intensity of situations are so well executed between just the like you said, like the shots that they use, the even when you're in game, just like the lighting and stuff that they use. Like I think it was kind of early on when I think there's like the part that's like a little bit flooded with the water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking down that hall and just kind of sitting back and going, holy shit, this game looks crazy.
Oh yeah.
And like just that shot looking down there and seeing that zombie like trudging through the water at you. And it was just like, damn, this is like people, you know, Dave, you said, or maybe it was you, Nick, that said like, you know, these big cinematic Sony games, I get it. God of War, Uncharted, they're all, they had the same feel. Resident Evil never had that before. It's never been on that level. This was the first time that they achieved this level of cinematography that you're just like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. But also, one thing that draws me to this, and this is why I like to say that it's Leon's story, because who doesn't like an underdog story? This is like a tale as old as time, is like the underdog coming up and being
there's no way I can handle this situation. The force.
Yeah. It's so cool to just watch this guy be like, holy shit, I can't handle this. This is crazy. What am I supposed to do here? And then he's just like, all right, I guess I got to man up. I got to do something about this. Can't just, mm-hmm. I need to prove myself here. Like mm-hmm. I'm a rookie. Yep. I need to prove myself. People are in danger. I got into this job to answer a call of duty to serve and protect people. And this is like the ultimate test immediately day one. Like, here you go.
For real.
Yeah, he's not like, the RE1 protagonists are on like the elite task force for the police department. Whereas, Leon's a rookie, like a, you know, pretty naive rookie a lot of times. I really like what Nick said, and I totally agree. Like the contrast, or I guess what I would say is like the context that this game provides when you're more familiar with RE4, like I am. In that game, like Leon's full of quips and one-liners, and he's like this confident, cocky, he's talking shit to the villains in RE4. And in this one, he's like, there's a little bit of that, but not much. Like it's very, like I wrote down that all the characters here feel like they're playing it straight. Like Leon, I guess because Leon doesn't have that yet in him, like he doesn't have all that experience and that cocky attitude yet. Ada's, you know, she's up to something. You know, she's up to something. Oh, so yeah. But she's playing that part pretty straight, like that cool, calm, and collected, like spy type character. And then, Claire's not a cop. She's just a girl who was at the gas station at the wrong time. She's just trying to find her brother, and so she's just trying to do what she can to survive. And then there's a nice story with Claire, where she kind of takes care of somebody, and that becomes a big arc for her in the game too. And that was nice too. But I feel like the dude who the only movie he ever saw was The Boss Baby. And then he goes and sees another movie and he compares everything to The Boss Baby because it's the only movie he's ever seen. Like, I feel like that's me with Resident Evil comparing things to RE4. I don't know if RE4 is the outlier for being like campy and funny and like ridiculous and over the top. This game's very much not that for most of the time. Like, it's more like classic horror. Like, you've got monsters, but like they're not Salazar from RE4. You've got villains, but they don't like talk shit to you the whole time. Maybe one of them does a little bit. He's kind of cartoony, the one in Claire's story, but it is kind of like a more standard horror story here. And it gets weird because it's Resident Evil, but like, I thought that one of the key things about Resident Evil was that super campy, over the top tone. And I'm coming to find out that's not really the case. That's more just RE4. And then it sounds like 6 also has a ton of that too. unserious game.
But. So something that I would say, Dave, and you're right to the extent that RE4 in my eyes is kind of the outlier of this genre where it's camp, but it's self-aware camp. And then as you go on, Capcom started chasing trends with 5 and 6. I think that's just bottom line. They wanted a different audience, or they just wanted a wider audience, and they wanted to incorporate that into Resident Evil, which is really unfortunate because it's, you know, kind of that conversation of when a developer doesn't stay in their lane. But at the point in time when this came out in 1998, Hideki Kamiya and Shinji Mikami were taking themselves super seriously. And an interesting thing about like the original development of this is that those two actually butted heads a lot during the development. And that kind of led towards increased tensions as they were going on to produce 3 as well as 4. And ultimately there was a split in 4, especially when, you know, Devil May Cry was being produced at the same time. But I think that's another reason why I love this game so much, is because, you know, really what their job was, or what the producers of Resident Evil 2 Remake job was, to take what already existed and then just make it as good as it could possibly be. And they didn't deviate from that in the best way. Right, and it's the same team. It's the same team between 4 and 2. I mean, they had a separate, I guess, their B team, for lack of a better word, work on Resident Evil 3 Remake. And they took it super seriously. And I love it when people do that and they get it right. You know, because when they do it wrong, it's just it feels kind of icky. I can't really think of any examples when that has gone wrong, but there are plenty out there. Probably, you know what would be a great example of that, Dave? Redfall is a great example of when producers take themselves way too seriously and then it just doesn't work out. But Resident Evil 2 Remake, fortunately for us, the players, really did pan out successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, at the top of the show, you said that you thought this was the scariest Resident Evil game. Tell me about it. What makes it the scariest in your eyes?
I sure did. There's two pieces to this. It's the music composition and the atmosphere, as well as the sound design. It's three things, technically. All of those incorporated together when you think about it, especially with this being my first true foray into survival horror, not knowing what I was doing, getting Leon just incessantly just chomped on by whatever they threw at you in this game, I had this feeling of foreboding dread that I have not felt before or since playing Bloodborne. And I think that the feeling of atmosphere in both of these games is very similar to that degree, in terms of as you're going through it, you really don't know what to expect and you're on the edge of your seat as you're going along. Yeah. You get a little bit more comfortable, and that's one of the interesting things about this game, is that as you go from hallway to hallway to room, you get more comfortable with the flow until the designers throw a wrench in your plans, or they, you know, decide to say, hey, you're not going to get any bullets in this room, and you kind of you wasted it on the zombie a while back, and so you're forced to kind of pivot, you're forced to be creative. But yeah, it's the combination of Mr. X really is the biggest example that I can give. The first time I see him, and like you said, he lifts that helicopter up, I'm just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And he starts following you. I'm like, and then I realize, and then you realize as you're playing it, the first time you're going throughout this game, he's not stopping to, like, he's continuing to look for you. There is a program in this game that's designed to track wherever Leon or Claire is in Raccoon City Police Department, and he just won't stop. And that is just like, that's a nightmare scenario, right? That's the classic nightmare scenario. And so I think they pulled that off really effectively. I learned, you know, ways to cheese him, especially once you have a mental map in your head of where the safe rooms are in RPD. He doesn't go through some walls, or does he? So it's it's really, really fun. And I enjoyed the scariness. It's also kind of the grotesque horror as you delve down into the sewer systems, and they start throwing some other mutations of the G virus at you. And that's when it started getting really intense for me. Cause it's like that feeling of I'm here, like RPD was one thing, but it was also comfortable once you kind of got the sense of it. It was still felt familiar, but then you're in the sewer system. You're like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. You're still inside when you're in RPD. Like now you're in the fucking sewers. Like, you know, you've played video games before. Nothing good happens in sewers.
Nope. Ever. Ever.
Except for the Ninja Turtles. They're kind of cool, I guess, but
yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. The only exception. I think you nailed it with basically all of those. It's almost like you're reading from my notes here. The sound design, let's start with that. The sound design is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The zombies, the sounds that they make, and the fact that, like, when you're going around the police station, the zombies are kind of chilling for the most part until you catch their attention. They might be off screen when you catch their attention, and they'll hit you with that yell or whatever the fuck. Yeah. I don't know how to describe a zombie sound. The screech. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, the screech. The gargle.
But you don't know that they're there. So there's a whole bunch of, like, little, oh fuck, I didn't know there's a zombie right there when I turned that corner.
Or they get up really quietly and they're behind you. God, you love it.
The footsteps for Mr. X are another thing.
Oh my God.
So like Nick said, Mr. X is a pursuing enemy that's introduced some like percent through your playthrough, like at a certain story beat. And it's like Nick said, like Mr. X continues to follow you around until you shake him somehow. Like he's not going to lose interest. You can't kill him. You can like use really powerful weapons to kind of stun him and run away, but
which you should not do. If you're trying to play this game correctly, you should not do that.
We'll talk about that. Like you need that.
Shoot his hat off. See what happens.
Yeah. There's the other reason why you shouldn't do that too. He's pursuing and he's just kind of like making the rounds through the police station. So you'll be off on the other side of the station doing your business. And then all of a sudden you hear that thump, 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 and they get louder and louder. And you're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Now it's like emergency mode. It's like, okay, whatever I was doing, we're going to have to put that on hold. And cause he's going to be here soon. And you don't want to, you know, you don't want to be in an enclosed space with Mr. X or something like that.
Yep.
So that plays into it too. And the soundscape, I think, this is more of a soundscape than songs playing in the background, but it's all super unnerving, you know, classic horror stuff, strings going wild. And, in intense moments, you get like that kind of industrial sounding, you know, rhythm going on in the background. But then it can be a very quiet game too. And that's disconcerting as well. Yep. And I really like that when games use silence for effect to kind of build atmosphere, like we said with Bloodborne or something like that.
There's nothing scarier than like opening a door and there's like the previous area had like, you know, this like sound, like this eerie just like a single string holding a note, and then you open a door and you go into another area and it's just nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
There's nothing more scary than when sound stops because you're like, fuck you. This I know. Bad. I know what
something's
you're doing.
Coming. Yeah. This is really bad. Yeah.
And then in typical RE fashion, something almost always happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I totally agree with what you're saying about Mr. X. Just hearing that boom, boom, the thing that I've said before, I'm lucky enough to have a very good surround sound system. I know a lot of people will play with headphones on, which is good. Don't get me wrong. When you have the surround sound system to complement this game, I'm going to tell you something right now. There are few games that have as good surround sound design. I think the only thing that really comes close is Dead Space.
Yeah.
Like the new Dead Space. Mm-hmm. And this one is like, I almost had to consider not using surround sound because I was like, it's unnerving. I can't, like, everything around, like everywhere I turn, I can hear like something like a screw or a bolt fall on the ground, and you're like aiming over there now, and it's just like, holy shit, like every little sound in that game is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Visually, I think the visuals play into the fear aspect as well. This is definitely the scariest Resident Evil game that I've played. It's scarier than 4 Remake, and I don't find RE1 or the original RE4 to be very scary. RE4 Remake's like horror for me was mostly on visuals and lighting, and it's really excellent in this game too. There's a lot of this game that you're navigating with a flashlight, and you know, that automatically makes things like, you know, 75% scarier when the lights are out and you just have a flashlight. And then all the designs of everything, the zombies and the visual design of Mr. X, he looks real creepy. His unnatural, like his skin tone is, it's like blue it's
like
gray.
Plastic. Yeah. Like a grayish. Yeah. He looks kind of like Thanos, honestly, but less purple.
Yeah. Kind of Thanos with a trench coat and a top hat on.
Yep.
Yeah. And then some of the other enemies, like Jerry, you talked about the lickers earlier. Those, you know, they look gross. As soon as you see one, you're like, oh, I don't want to be anywhere near that thing. And then as you go on later, there's some really good body horror later on, especially in like the lab area, which isn't a spoiler. Every Resident Evil game seems to have a lab. Mm-hmm. Great body horror later. So just visually, sound design, Mr. X, you know, never letting you feel comfortable is one of the things, like with the Crimson Heads in Resident Evil 1. Also, when you started to feel comfortable in the mansion, then they start to get up. And that's the kind of the same thing in this game. When you start to feel comfortable in the police station, Mr. X shows up.
Yep.
And so like from a scares or stress, we'll say, perspective, I think everything's really well done here.
Yeah. And just to kind of piggyback off that as well, I think one of the most successful ways that they get you immersed into the horror aspect of this game is that they make you care about the protagonists. I think that Leon and Claire, you know, again, there's not a whole lot there, but there is just enough to see Leon's earnestness and his willingness, especially his interactions very early on with Marvin his willingness to take control of the situation and try to get shit done. And then also Claire's empathy and her willingness to be kind of this very, very much kind but stoic soul. It really makes you care about these people. The worst thing that a horror creator can do is make, you know, the audience not care about the protagonists, and you want to keep them alive. And as soon as you get forward in, you're like, no, in my mind, at the very least, like I wanted to keep both of these characters alive as much as I could.
I was like, especially with the Resident Evil games, I like to tell people to kind of think and take like a mental snapshot of how that game starts and how it ends, because the development of the way that they start you off, like it's almost like you start up here with tension and shit, and it like it keeps ramping up and it keeps ramping up, and then it, like it'll die down, and then you're just like, oh, this is a weird part now. And it's more like sci-fi, but then like they somehow ramp that back up, and then it just keeps like this really cool roller coaster going. And then like just the difference of how you start a Resident Evil game to how you end a Resident Evil game are just like, just think about it for a second. Like think about how Resident Evil 2 starts and how the characters are. And then by the end of that game, how the characters are, where you are, like what kind of enemies you've been fighting, like zombies. Mm-hmm. Who cares about zombies? By the end of that game, you're like, dude, I need a rocket launcher now. Like, I don't, I can't deal with shit with a pistol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's listen to some of that Resident Evil 2 music, and then when we come back, it's time to dive into the gameplay. So the game starts out, I think the majority of the game hours-wise takes place in Raccoon City Police Department, which I think, just first of all, from a level design perspective, is just like chef kiss. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Level. Tons of, you know, paths that work around and connect back to other places in like the main like atrium area. There's a ton of like unlockable doors and shortcuts, and you're just constantly becoming more and more familiar with this space. It's very similar to the mansion in Resident Evil 1, which is another just incredible video game level. A lot of backtracking and lots of seeds planted, almost like a Metroidvania does, where they'll show you something that you want, and then you have to figure out the puzzles or get the items to unlock that thing. Like really early on, you go into like the weapons storage area in the police station, and they show you a bunch. There's like an inventory upgrade in there, and there's a shotgun in there or something, some other weapon. I forget. I think it's a shotgun. And you're like, oh, I want all that stuff, but like the keypad's broken. So you got to figure out how to use the keypad. And they do that so many times, like planting these seeds of, I want to get to that spot because there's something cool in there. And just strictly from like a level design perspective, Raccoon City Police Department will put it up in that top tier. Like I can't really think of anything that could, you know, be like noticeably better than this as a level.
Other Resident Evil games maybe.
Yeah.
That have
yeah.
Like a similar thing.
Like, yeah. It's got that thing that I love about From Software levels, like all of that same stuff that around. I think that both of them do so well. It's really great.
One thing I was going to say that I really like about the gameplay of this one, and it kind of ties into what you're saying, Dave, I am not a completionist. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't play games to 100% them. I don't play games to get all the achievements or the trophies. I don't do that. However, when it comes to Resident Evil, you bet your ass I'm making sure that all those rooms are blue and not red. And mm-hmm. I love that they tell you, guess what? You're done here. Nothing else left here. So you don't you can move on. You don't have to keep scouring this or trying to figure this puzzle out. Nope. You got everything in this room. Move on. It's blue, baby. Let's go.
They will also tell you on the map what item, specific item is in there. I think the way it works is if you looked at it, like if your character field of vision like went over the item, they'll just say, hey, there's a green herb in this room. So we'll talk about like the inventory stuff in a little bit, but you can't pick up everything you might want to. So it's really helpful that map not only shows you when you're done, but it also shows you what is waiting for you. So get in some hairy situations, you're like, I need some fucking ammo. Open up the map and go see where some ammo is.
It's almost like a secondary inventory screen, because you can be like, I only have enough room for this stuff. But like, if I open my map up, I got inventory here. I got inventory here. I got to backtrack over here. But fuck this place, because I know Mr. X is down around that area. So not going back for that green herb down there, but I for sure can get this one over here. And then as soon as you open a door, Mr. X is standing right in front of you.
I think that Raccoon City Police Department is really good because as soon as you get through it, and like you said, they have moments of escalation where they're heightening the tension for you, whether introducing Mr. X or whether introducing liquors to the scenario, but they have moments of escalation as you go through it. However, they give you just enough time, and they must have done so much testing on this game before they launched it, because it feels perfect in terms of, I have the mental map in my head. I don't even need to like pull up the map on the trackpad to find out like where exactly I am in the police department. I think that that's one of the advantages of this as a video game level. And I think another fact is the idea that you have this a little bit later in your notes, Dave, but that there's culture here. You have a sense, like, first of all, I mean, yeah, art. It was an art museum. And shout out to the Raccoon City Council for approving a law enforcement exactly, office taking over a museum. Who, like, that would never fly today, but it works perfectly for a video game level. And I'm really, really happy that we got it. But it's also more of the pieces of flavor text that Leon picks up, notes, diaries that other people leave behind. You get a sense of what the police force was like, whether it's in the Star's office or with, like, the main people downstairs. You even walk into, like, the main room where they have basically all of the desks pushed together, like a classic. You think of a 1980s police office and everybody's busy. And you see Happy Birthday, Leon, up there. And then, like, people are welcome. Or it's welcome, Leon, I think. I don't know if it was his first day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have like a initiation type thing where they locked his desk drawer shut with two padlocks or whatever.
Exactly.
And they're like, okay, your first test, rookie, is open your desk. Mm-hmm. You're right. Like, you do get a sense of how the group of people was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that also kind of just, it lends to the tragedy of what happened to everybody here. And I think that there are people who will walk away from that or just not even notice or care at all about it. And that's perfectly fine. But I think that it adds context to what you're doing and why you're there. And that's so important for me in video games. I always need some type of reasoning or seeing remnants of people in the area that I am going through video games. Even if you're the only one left alive in that area, it does make it feel lived in, and it does make it somehow scarier too.
Mm-hmm. I always say that there's always something for everybody in a Resident Evil game.
Yeah.
Whether, like, even if you don't like horror games, that's fair. But I guarantee you, horror aside, there's something in a Resident Evil game that is as good as it can possibly be for you. One thing that I'll say, the gun handling and the sound of the gun design and just, like, the weight of when you fire just, like, your pistol in the beginning, it just has this, like, really thocky, like, duh, duh. And, like, I don't know. There's something about that, like, it's weird contrast because it's, like, it feels so powerful that you have this really powerful-sounding weapon, but then you're instantly made to feel so vulnerable because you just empty this shit on one zombie. You're seeing pieces of his cheeks flying off, like he's missing his shoulder blades, and you're just like, well, that's it. That's all I got for the pistol.
Yeah.
But, like, the balance that they have for the way that the weapons work, because as much as that sounds like a dire situation where it's like, oh, I can't do anything to the zombie. Well, you know what? You gotta figure it out. You're gonna have to upgrade that weapon a little bit. You're gonna have to, like, figure out, like, different ways, like, hey, why don't you shoot him in the kneecap? Yeah, put that guy down first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You don't actually have to kill them all.
No.
That's the key. And that's something else that newcomers to survival horror that I've heard a lot of, especially jumping onto, like, these new Resident Evil remakes and stuff. They're like, dude, I just keep running out of bullets. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to kill everything. This isn't Call of Duty. You don't, you don't see something and go, I have to kill it. Sometimes you don't. You just got to get away from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of on the subject of the combat, I guess we can kind of intro the combat. So it's a third-person shooter. You can move and shoot in this game, but you're incentivized to stop and shoot because your aiming gets much more accurate if you're standing still and shooting. You do more damage, and you do more critical hits. And critical hits save you ammo. And saving ammo is good because, as Jerry introduced, you do not get enough ammo to kill everything in the game. Killing enemies makes the areas safer, but you just don't have enough to kill everything, which is a tough adjustment to get used to. Mm-hmm. I think it took me a while because I played Resident Evil 1. Resident Evil 1 works the same way. You can't and should not try to kill everything in that game. But this game looks like RE4. Which is a game where you do kill everything. So it took me a little while to get in that groove. Jerry introduced you can injure body parts on the zombies. Obviously, headshots are good. Headshots save you ammo. But like you said, if a zombie's walking toward you and you just don't want to spend the ammo, you can shoot them in the knee or shoot them in the leg and they'll fall down and you can run past them. Mm-hmm. If you get a critical hit, you'll like blow their leg off. And then the next time you come around, they'll just be crawling around. They're easier to get around if they're down like that. Let's talk about those zombies, because I think Resident Evil 4 kind of unlocked the importance of having good, just regular enemies, you know, the standard enemies that you find. And the ones in RE4 still cannot be beat, in my opinion. They're so engaging throughout the game. No matter what's going on, they're great. The ones in RE2 are pretty damn good as well. As far as zombies go, the first thing about them I think is awesome is they're zombies, and we have this image of zombies in our heads that they just kind of mindlessly shamble. And if you happen to be in their path, they'll grab you. And they're predictable, we'll say. Even if they're fast, like 28 days later zombies, they're predictable. You know what they're going to do.
That would suck.
They don't really do that in this game. They're not super predictable. Like, their movements are really weird. And
yeah,
like, if you're trying to line up a headshot, they might like sway out of the way for no real reason.
Exactly.
You don't really know when they're going to lurch and try and grab you. Like, that unpredictability, I think, adds a lot, because most of the things you fight in this game are these just regular zombies. So that unpredictability helps keep things fresh every single time you see one.
Yeah, I think that the zombies this time around, it's very interesting comparing Ganados to the regular zombies in this game, because Ganados definitely, they feel more self-aware and they behave more self-aware. Obviously, they're attacking you, they're using tools, they're throwing shit at you. You don't necessarily get that from zombies in this game. What I will say to note on something that you said earlier, Dave, is the fact that, yeah, you are incentivized to stop and shoot and get those focus shots. It is very encouraged that you try to get headshots in this game. However, I'll tell you, the first time playing this game, you know, when I'm shooting a zombie in the head, I've had times where I've emptied a pistol clip into a zombie's head and they're not down and they're not dead. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And all I have is maybe a knife on me, maybe a flashbang on me. Something that obviously is really, really vital for people thinking about playing this game is that you really have to lean on those defensive items. Those defensive items are almost more valuable than 90% of the ammo that you can pick up in this game, because inevitably you are going to, they're going to bottleneck you. They're going to put you in situations where you're not able to get around it or try to move your hitbox out of the way of some of these zombies to get to stairs or whatever you need to do to accomplish your goal at that moment in time. And you're going to have to stab, or you're just going to have to throw a flashbang in their mouth and either wait for it to explode or shoot it. And then you can take out a group of enemies. There's a lot of strategy that's at play here. And there's a lot of crowd management that you can do as you're playing this game. And I think that that was really fun. That was really engaging, especially when you go into a hallway, especially in the West Wing, and you see these grouping of zombies that are there. It's really important. There's also something to note I don't think that we've touched on yet, but when you're in RPD, in the first instance of RPD, there are zombies that are banging at the window. And scattered throughout the map, that there are different wooden planks. And it's really, really important that when you see a wooden plank, you pick it up and you try to board up those windows when you can, because that's going to save you so much time and so much headache later on, because you're not going to have to deal with as many problems as you go through.
Yeah, but in classic, you know, Resident Evil fashion, let's say you get 15 wooden planks and there's like 60 windows in the station. So you got to be real strategic about which windows you board up.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing worse than running through a hallway and being like, all right, Mr. X is way back there. I got this. He's not going to catch up to me for a hot. Oh, fuck. And then there's just zombies busting through the window. And you're like, oh, great. Now I got to deal with this. Now I have a bundle of zombies to deal with on top of Mr. X is now basically sitting on top of my kneecaps.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Nick, you mentioned the headshots on the zombies. I wanted to just return to that real quick, because that's a really good point. It's really unpredictable how many shots it's going to take to down a zombie here. And it's like a real small touch, but it adds so much to that unpredictability too. Like, you'll shoot a zombie in the head and they'll like stagger backward, but then they'll right themselves and come at you again. But that stagger backward animation starts the exact same as the animation for when they fall down dead. So like, you hit them and they kind of lean back and you're like, is it dead? Is it dead? And it's like several seconds go by as it kind of like shakes it off and then comes back at you. And you're like, oh shit. Like I should have, you know, run away or shot it again or something. Like, especially if there's multiples, like waiting to figure out if that's going to take that zombie down. It's like a big deal and it's a really small touch, but it's like, ah, it's so good. Like Capcom is really fucking good at this.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, it's kind of like to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, you know, you have this situation where you're dialed in on one, right? And you're like, okay, like I want to make sure this guy falls down at least. As soon as you add one or even two more to that situation, that is immediately stressful. I don't care if you got the shotgun, what you have. Like, it's like dealing with more than two, even like halfway through the game, is a stressful situation. Mm-hmm. And I love the balance that they made with the, as you guys said, the unpredictability of not every zombie has the same HP, if you will. You know, you can unload, like, I for sure know exactly what you're talking about, Nick. There's been times I've point blank shot a zombie like in the chest with a shotgun and he's gone down. I'm like, okay, that guy's definitely dead. And then you walk past and he like grabs you and it's like, how the hell are you still alive?
Exactly. Yep.
Like, I love that unpredictability. And I think that's why the zombies work so damn good in this game.
Yeah, it's interesting. My co-host on the show, he had, at the behest of a couple of our mutual friends, had been told to play these remakes for some time and was very stubborn about doing it until he finally relented and did. And he started with three and absolutely adored it because it is action centric and you they just throw ammunition at you depending on what difficulty you play on. I can't remember if he played on hardcore or not, but he loved it and he loved Jill as a character. And then he jumped into two and was like, this game sucks. I can't kill anything in this game. And I was like, that's because you're trying to be John Wick and it's not Resident Evil 4, Will. You can't do that this time.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing about the zombies, I think that like just kind of the cherry on top, and Jerry, you mentioned it, like shooting them anywhere but the head, or if you're trying to be real strategic, like shooting out their legs, almost doesn't affect them. Like shooting them in the chest, you might as well not shoot them at all.
Exactly.
And I think that that lends a lot of like the fear element to them as enemies. Cause like how many games have you played with zombie type enemies, but they go down, you know, real easy. Like they'll throw a pack of 60 zombies at you and you just mow them down like they're nothing. A game I'm doing on the show soon, Sunset Overdrive, is a game that has zombies in it and you fight a bunch of zombies and those things go down like nothing. But the ones in RE2, they're like superheroes basically. Like they're really hard to bring down.
Yeah.
And the fact that you have that limited ammo, it makes it so if you like shoot a zombie in the chest and it doesn't kill it, you're like, I just wasted shotgun ammo. Shotgun ammo is like gold. Like,
yeah,
that sucks. It's a bad feeling.
Because there's always a part of you that thinks like, it should do something to it. And like,
yeah, when you're in those, we're conditioned by other video games to expect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like when you're in a panicky situation, you know that you got to get the headshot. But I don't know if you're like me, but there's been times where you're just like starting to get overwhelmed that you're just fuck it. I'm just going to, I have to take a shot. I have to deal with this somehow. And then, you shoot a zombie point blank in the chest and they're just like, whatever, dude.
Yep. Yeah. The other element of this is, let's say you're starting to get familiar with fighting the zombies, or let's say you're starting to get familiar with running around the zombies. Mr. X is a combat consideration as well, because it's like this traveling boss basically that you can't fight, so you can use grenades or something like that to stagger him, but grenades are super valuable. Like you might be walking down a hallway and you need to get to your safe room and there's four zombies standing in front of it, and this is not a game where you can just like bull rush your way through four of them. You just can't do it, so you need your grenades for situations like that. Mr. X is there to shake things up and make those comfortable situations. Like there's a library in the station because it's a museum.
Oh, God, you know, the library.
Favorite police stations all have libraries in them. And there's a bunch of zombies in the library. And I got pretty good at, you know, just running past them through all the doors that I need. I could juke out the zombies. Mr. X loves to go to the library. So every time I'm going through there, it felt like he was there too. It is a great sentence. And Mr. X,
he loves the library.
Accelerated reader.
He's a big reader. He's a literature buff.
I'm sorry, sir. Do you have your library card?
And it's like, until you get to that moment when you, it's RPD 2 and you have to move those bookcases together and you're in that library for probably 60 seconds as a total. And you know, he's finding you, you hear him open the door. Oh, and surprise, if you didn't previously kill those zombies, they're looking for you too. And it's intense.
So we talked about like the horror aspect of Mr. X. They call him the tyrant in the game, but Mr. X, everyone calls him Mr. X. Mm-hmm. This is what I didn't really love about this game. I understand the need to introduce something to like shake things up and keep people from becoming complete masters of the police station. Like, I get that, but I never felt like I was a complete master of the police station, even without Mr. X, because I'm pretty bad at aiming. You have limited ammo to begin with. I felt like the challenge of ammo versus amount of enemies was enough for me. So when Mr. X comes in and I just find myself in like pretty unwinnable situations, like lots of situations where I need to like get through a hallway because I'm trying to do a puzzle, or I'm trying to get to a safe room, or I'm trying to get out of a safe room. There's a safe room at the bottom of some stairs, kind of near the RPD like main office. And there's just a fuck ton of zombies there all the time. And Mr. X is just constantly following me. And I got in a bunch of situations that were very frustrating, where it was like, I'm already having a hard time. Now you introduce this unfightable enemy. And in both playthroughs with Leon and with Claire, I just like this pushed it like over the edge into frustration for me personally, as opposed to, I think, the intended effect of like, you're feeling uncomfortable and then you start like the comfort level starts to rise and they want to bring it back down. But like that comfort level never really rose for me all that much. So then the comfort level went into like the deep red when Mr. X is there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So this is that thing where I was talking about, where it's like, I understand why this is a good game design decision. I understand why people like it. I had a really bad time with this. It felt like, use the analogy of invasions in Dark Souls and Elden Ring and Bloodborne, where it's like, I am just like putting everything I have into mastering this space and surviving and making progress. And then some fucking asshole invades my game and, you know, either kills me if they're nice about it, or just like dicks around in my game if they're a real asshole. And it just kind of like takes me out of the experience. This isn't as bad as that, but I still like had a pretty bad time. It's like not a fan.
I would be
the experience
curious to see what you think of Resident Evil 3, the original Resident Evil 3, not the remake, because I feel like they modeled a lot of what Mr. X is off of how Nemesis is in Resident Evil 3.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Because he is very much like, when he shows up, which is very early on, like way, way more early than what Mr. X shows up in Resident Evil 2. It is a constant reminder you are being followed. But the way they do it, it's not as constant as Mr. X is. It's not like once he shows up, he's not going anywhere, like until a certain point in the game. Whereas Nemesis is kind of like, I don't know if you've ever watched How I Met Your Mother and understand this reference, but Nemesis is basically like Slapsgiving. He's like, you don't know when it's going to, you don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Always
and
there.
It's, yeah. And it's going to fucking hurt. And he busts through walls that you're like, okay, I'm in a new area. Oh shit. And he will just come through a wall. And at the time on PS1, that was like That was blasphemy. You can't have this guy just chase me through a loading screen. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they adopted that a lot with Mr. X. And I do like Mr. X. I do. But Dave, I do kind of agree with you on one thing. Never really thought about it until just now. It is kind of annoying when you're like, okay, I got this fucking key. I got the spade key. I know I just got to go to get to that door. I can't leave this room. If I open this door up, I can see him go back up the stairs. Okay, there's my opening. Oh, but wait, no, there's like six zombies right here. So then you're like, so how do I deal with this? I can't. I need to make a lot of noise, and now he's chasing me. And all I want to do, I know what I have to do. I'm quite confident in that I could get to that room if it just wasn't for this situation. But at the same time, I totally understand what you're saying of like understanding what the developers are going for with the trying to bring down that level of comfort. And they did it, but I feel like they kind of like they had their foot on the gas and then they were like, why don't we put nitrous in it too? Why don't we make this go way faster?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, I think it is that feeling of like, I need to do a very simple thing, like take a key to a door. But I can't because Mr. X is outside and he's just not fucking leaving. And there was a lot, there's a point where you kind of like break through like the immersion, we'll say, where I'm like, the only way I can get rid of him is to sit in this safe room for 10 fucking minutes until he leaves. And
or
10 minutes is an exaggeration. 3 minutes. But that's three whole real-time minutes where I'm just sitting, I'm listening, I hear the footsteps. Oh, is he gone? No, I hear the footsteps still. He's not gone yet. And then, oh, there's a door slammed. He left. And then I go outside and he's in the hallway. Like, he's still there. Like, times when it's immersion breaking like that, that like, I see what they're trying to do. I think it's a good idea. I just didn't like it.
I'm wondering, I'm curious, Dave, like I don't think, and I'm in no way saying it's a skill issue at all, but I am curious to wonder if it might have been a little bit of a bug on your end because you played it on the Steam, because my experience with him playing on the PS4 and the PS5 is that I love that aspect of, and I think it contributed to the immersion for me, especially in scenarios where you're in a safe room and you're like, oh my God, thank God I'm safe. And you develop the photo and there's that stairwell that's going up in that west wing section with the window right by it. And, hearing him walk around the door and then walk back and you hear him boom, boom, boom going up the stairs, it reminded me of being like, this is what I would do in this situation if I was behind a safe door and I was just waiting and I knew I had to go somewhere and I was just waiting to listen to see if he's gone. I don't know if you've looked at any of like the development or the back end tech that they work on, but there have been people who have done verticals where they'll actually like look at the overview of what happens to the map whenever Mr. X is not immediately nearby, especially if he goes like through a door, is that the program of Mr. X, once you leave a safe area, will essentially leave. And of course he's moving fast. He's moving faster than you would want him to. He moves just as fast as Leon and Claire does when they're like not sprinting. But what happens is that once he goes through the door, his program starts zipping all around the different ends of the police department. So they basically force him to go through exactly the opposite direction of where you are, but just really, really fast. So it kind of is, it's like an exaggerated way of being like, oh, it creates that unpredictability of where he's going to wind up or where he's going to be. Or you're up on that top floor of the atrium in the entrance of the police department and you see him like downstairs and he's walking upstairs because he made eye contact with you. I understand it. I totally see why you felt that way. I don't agree. I feel like I definitely ran into issues with constraints on my ammo. I probably poured one too many clips during my first playthrough, especially with Leon, into a few zombies. Liquors, when you combine, there's a section where the gameplay designers combined a liquor encounter while Mixter X was pursuing, and I was unfortunate enough to encounter both in the same room, and that was terrible for me. That was terrible. But for the most part, like, especially in this most recent run I did with Claire, I felt amazing handling him. And the reason why is because I never engaged him. I never wasted a drop of ammunition on him. I heavily utilized the grenade launcher because they scatter around fire rounds all throughout this map. And yeah, if you're able to use those fire rounds strategically on zombies in those rooms, there are ways that you can go about the Claire B route where you really never have to return to certain rooms if you're doing it correctly.
Yeah, the Claire route was easier because I kind of understood, first of all, don't shoot his hat off this time. Don't do that. He doesn't like that. And I kind of understood how it works a little bit more. It was still a challenge, and it still encroached on like the thing that I like the most about this game, which is why I ultimately don't like this. Like the frustration of feeling like I can't do my task because he just won't leave this stairwell area. That sucked. But the thing that I like the most about this game is exploring and,
yeah,
you know, finding items, finding like the key items for all the puzzles. I like exploring around the mansion. I like the feeling of, okay, I just got like this battery. I know where to take this battery. This battery is going to unlock a door, or it's going to give me some treasure. I like the somewhat challenge of getting back to that place. But then, like, those are main mission type things. The thing that Mr. X encroached on was all that optional stuff, like optional exploring, going back and finding, you know, picking up that thing that I didn't have inventory space for earlier, or doing optional puzzles. Like, there's some weapons that I didn't get during my Leon run because I was in this mindset of like, if I go and try and get that weapon or do this puzzle that doesn't seem to be necessary, I'm going to waste more stuff that I'm going to get because Mr. X is going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of zombies. And it seemed like it was going to be a bad overall decision for me to do that. And it's because of Mr. X and that constant threat that discouraged me from exploring, which is like why it's my favorite thing about this game is the level design and exploring. And Mr. X just kind of like discouraged me from going off the critical path. It's probably, this is why my playthrough is like half the time of yours, because I fucking beelined it from objective to objective so that I could minimize encounters basically with him and with zombies. Cause I was struggling with ammo. There were several times in this game where I had nothing, no ammo, no knife, no grenades, nothing. And it was a real struggle during those times.
Now, Dave, I would encourage you to revisit this game. Did you play it on PC?
I did. Well, so that was during my A route when I had like the biggest struggles. When I played the B route with Claire, I didn't run into those to that degree, you know.
Well, I'll say this. Maybe you want to revisit this on PC because there's a little tweak that you can do to Mr. X, which I think is one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen. There's a mod that will put DMX's X gonna give it to you on him so that when he is coming towards you, you just hear the music of that getting louder and louder. And then like, he's just busting doors. I was like, X gonna give it to you. And it's just like, it is the craziest mod I've ever seen in a game.
That's
and
very I good.
Can we please include that in the episode music?
That's extremely good.
Did you guys just put the
podcast on YouTube and going to get copyright strikes. Yeah. That's worth it. That's worth it. I didn't know about that. That's very funny.
Mm-hmm. That is it. Oh yeah, it's hilarious. Like, look up stuff on YouTube and it is absolutely hilarious. And I don't mod games. I immediately was like, I have to do this. I have to try this out. I have to go find how to do this because it is one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen, because it's so fitting. X gonna give it to you, like, that's
oh yeah
It's amazing.
Ready
it's
or not. Yeah. So I feel like I spent a disproportionate amount of time like talking about my experience with Mr. X, but this is the thing where it's like, I think this game is a 10 out of 10, like very fucking good game, but my experience with it was not a 10 out of 10, you know, like this was a game that I appreciate more than I enjoyed playing, if that makes sense. And I enjoyed playing it a lot, but in most other games, if there's a certain aspect of gameplay that you don't love, you can kind of section that off to the side and be like, well, I like the combat, but the puzzles, whatever. But like Mr. X is so pervasive through this game. He affects everything that you're doing when you're in the police station. And then some other parts later, he's still there, that like it kind of permeates my whole experience with it rather than being able to just, you know, like I said, like make that divider and be like, well, I don't like what's in this box, but the rest of the box is great.
Mm-hmm. So would you say you would give it like a IGN 8.3?
Something for everybody, something like that. No, it's not like, it's not something that I think would affect if I'm like going to give like a critical score, you know, if I'm critiquing or analyzing the game on that level. Like this is not something that I think is bad, just really affected my experience. And it's like, it's a reason why I'll replay the RE4 remake. I don't think I'm going to replay this unless I put that DMX mod on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it is interesting. And I think that your experience here may have also been very much colored by the route that you chose to do for your A route. I think that Mr. X's presence in Claire's version of this story is much less prevalent than William Birkin is. And I think that obviously her encounters with him in the second half of this game, Mr. X is still there. He's still a very much a problem to deal with, a contender to deal with. But as you move forward later on in the game, Birkin becomes kind of the main antagonist, the primary worry that you have to consider versus in Leon's route. And that's true. That might be colored by it.
This is, very much influenced by me doing Leon's route first. And so that kind of being like the canon playthrough, whereas Claire's feels like an alternate or like a second half of it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's weird that I feel that way because the Claire's B route was not shorter. I actually put my completion screenshots in here. They're the like a strikingly similar time for both of those playthroughs. But I think you do spend less time in the police station when you're playing as Claire.
Yeah, I'm really upset that for whatever reason, and my PS4 is gone. I gave my PS4 to my younger sibling, and and the save data file is just probably somewhere in the cloud, but I don't have access to it because Sony is weird like that. But I did, like, when I loaded up this game and I downloaded the PS5 version to play on the PS5, it ported over a lot of my saved game data, so it acknowledged that I did the Leon A run, but it didn't necessarily give me the stats or the information. So I really wish I had that to share with you guys today. But I definitely think that if it had switched up, you might have had different impressions, or it might have given you a different feeling, or overall it just might have landed the same with you. I agree to the extent of him breaking that level of wanting to explore. I definitely think that that was one of the things that, as you go throughout the different settings in this game, both with the RPD as well as the lab later on, I was always intensely curious to see what had happened to the people that were there or how the game had changed as you moved beyond it. But it didn't impact me, I think, to the same degree that it did with you, which is okay, because I think that it probably will just land differently with everybody. But kind of similar to what Jerry was saying, I vastly enjoyed the feeling of horror that Mr. X gave me here in this game versus Nemesis in Resident Evil 3 Remake. I felt like Nemesis was milquetoast. I felt like he was hyped up to be this whole big thing, and then he was like in the game for like 5 minutes, and then, you know, we had a couple boss fights with him at the very end there. I felt like they were much less prevalent, less advertised enemies in RE3 Remake that I very much felt like, you know, gave me the scares and gave me all of the different feelings. But I feel like the kind of the sound design of his footsteps, along with just the nature of like who he is and how he's interacting with you as the player throughout this environment, it just it landed right with me both times I played it. And I think that So for context for the listeners too, my Claire B run, I got an S and I did it in 3 hours. However,
show off.
However, I studied for that playthrough, right? So I read through guides. I didn't watch completely because I didn't want to be spoiled on like how it was different later on in this game. But I did kind of look at a few tips of people saying like, okay, these are the primary puzzle components more than anything else, because I did want to, I only have so much time in the day. I did want to streamline my playthrough. But I was really, really surprised at how different the experience was going through the police department as Claire. And like you said, it is easier because the idea for the lore and the context of the game is that Claire is just a little bit behind Leon. Leon's just one step ahead of her. So there are certain things that she picks up, like the signal regulator down in the lab, or she'll pick up certain keys much earlier than Leon will because he has to go through this whole rigmarole to get it. But I got access to the grenade launcher early on. And so limiting my experience in doing some really, really heavy item box management in this game just made it a breeze to get through. And I loved that. I loved being able to kind of just jump through that game as Claire.
One thing that, like, one last thing about Mr. X that I was going to bring up too. Since Capcom kind of did this, like, reimagining of the Resident Evil series, like, starting with 7, there's always kind of been that thing. So Resident Evil 7. Dave, did you play Resident Evil 7? I can't remember if you said you did or not.
Nope, not going to either.
No, you have to, Dave. You're on the track.
I certainly do not have to. No.
Is it too scary?
Yes, too scary.
Yeah, it is really scary.
I heard you talk about it on the other podcast.
Yeah, it is pretty bad.
It's really bad.
So I think a way more intense. So yeah, you know what, Dave? Maybe fucking don't play that game, because if you didn't like Mr. X, Jack is just Mr. X on fucking crack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That dude is insane and he is relentless. But same kind of thing. Jack is the Mr. X of Resident Evil 7. In Resident Evil 8, Lady Dimitrescu is basically Mr. X. She's just always following you around.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you leave that area, you don't have to worry about her anymore.
And one note, little piece of lore that you and the listeners might enjoy hearing about, especially why he doesn't like the hat getting shot off his head as you go yeah. throughout the game. the suit that he's wearing, his goofy character design, actually was developed by Umbrella Corporation, because Mr. X is he's a tyrant, and if you know anything about Resident Evil lore, tyrants are biomutants. And the tech, they have like technology and chemicals that are imbued in his trench coat and his hat that keep his power level from overflowing, and from him, they keep him from mutating. So that's why as soon as you see him, you know, change forms later on in the game, it's because he doesn't have that on anymore.
Yeah. That's why he does like get more powerful if you shoot his hat off. And mm-hmm. it's not just that he's self-conscious about his head.
Yeah.
Did you shoot the hat off like in your first run?
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah, almost.
That's why he wouldn't leave you alone. He's really, really upset about that. That's
really fucking sensitive.
Don't put a goofy hat on an enemy and expect me not to try and shoot it off. Come on.
Fucking Dick Tracy over here.
So I guess like the last thing, and then we'll move on. Acknowledging that this is only about half the playthrough where Mr. X is like very front and center. There's a bunch of other stuff where he's not really around. He comes back every now and then. But those levels are what I like that slow exploration at my own pace. I'm not yakety saxing anybody around. I'm taking my time. Good level design in the other levels. We already talked about like some really good horror in the later levels. Just acknowledging like this is not an entire game like struggle that I had, but it's very focused on like the biggest level, we'll say. So really good stuff later in the game. One last thing about gameplay, Resident Evil Survival Horror, also known for puzzles, and just wanted to get your guys' quick thoughts on the puzzles in RE2 Remake.
Absolutely incredible, in my opinion. They're just simple enough to be they strike that balance where it's like it's complicated to the extent of like you realize as you encounter a puzzle, you're like, oh darn it, I thought I was going to get through this area and I was going to get what I needed, but then you encounter I need a medallion or I need a key to get through this door, and you're like, oh well, I guess I have to look a little bit deeper into where I'm trying to get to or what I'm trying to do. But they strike that balance of being just complex enough to be like, as soon as you solve it, you're like, I'm a genius. And then you keep going on. A lot of it is very matchy-matchy. And then some of it is a little bit more kind of esoteric because it relies on the player picking up notes and reading those notes, which is not something that people really like doing. People don't like to read in video games, but you really do have to read those to, pick those up. So Leon knows how to solve certain locks and how to open certain safes. And I thought that it was good. I thought it was fun. And it made the experience again feel a little bit more lived in. It was very video gamey. It didn't seem like it was like naturally like you would ever encounter this in that type of situation, obviously, but it still was fun.
That's actually what I like about it though, because I view the puzzles as a different kind of thing than I think you both and probably most people do. I look at the puzzles as almost like a vehicle that pushes you forward to the next level, because the puzzles lend themselves so good to, Dave, you mentioned before, and it's not the first time that you will ever hear a Resident Evil game kind of be echoed to a Metroidvania, because you will eventually kill something and be like, what the fuck is this thing? Oh, this thing belongs back in that room from like the beginning part. I can now go back to that thing now. And it's more of like a, like the puzzles are more like gates than they are. Like to me, like, yeah, the puzzles weren't so hard that you're just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to figure this out. Like you can kind of just strong hand your way through like the majority of the puzzles, but it's the fact that like when you discover certain things that you're like, oh, this thing like aligns with this puzzle that I'm working on, or like this piece. Now I have to find like, oh, I have half of a thing. Now I got to find the other half. And then when you find the other half, you're like, yes. But now where does this go? Like there's like a whole thing of like the way that the puzzles gate you to different areas and different situations that I love about the Resident Evil games. And I think it's the puzzles themselves are like more than the sum of their own parts. Like, in my opinion,
they are kind of like different forms of keys rather than like puzzles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But two things that I think make them good are, number one, like you just said, Jerry, every lock, we'll say, or every puzzle to be solved leaves a really strong impression, because most of the things are weird as shit. So it's like, oh, there's a statue missing its arm or something like that. So when I find the arm of a statue, I'll be like, oh, okay, I know exactly where to go with this. I am trying to solve this puzzle to open up this thing in the police station, and I need to go to these three statues. All those statues are super distinct. When you see one, you know exactly what it is. Stuff like that. And the other part is they play into the inventory management too. And a lot of the puzzle items are multi-use. So it's not like you find some bolt cutters, you cut one chain, and then it's time to get rid of the bolt cutters. You know, like you might need to keep those around. And the game is very nice. They'll tell you when you're done with one of those items.
Yep.
Like you've used this key on every door that it unlocks. You can throw this key away now. Very nice of them to let me know. But for a while, you got to keep that key in your inventory. If you're like me, or if you're super brave, put it in the item box. And then like when you come across that door, you know, you got to go grab that key. So that stuff's really good, because like the inventory is limited enough that you can't just carry everything that you think you might need. You got to carry the stuff that you know you're going to need, and then like a couple things you might need. It's a nice balance, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's so interesting too, because it's like that that discoverability aspect of exploring the area, but then the discoverability aspect of interacting with those objects. They feel real, and they feel kind of malleable too, because there are certain puzzles where it's like, particularly, you know, one that comes to mind is when you're opening like a chest box, or you have there's a scepter, and on the back of the scepter, you have to examine that item in your inventory, spin it around, and then move a tab up to take that thing out so you can actually put it to where it needs to be. You do the same thing with the stars badge in order to get an upgraded weapon that you need in there, which is super vital for any playthrough. Honestly, everybody should get those stars weapons.
I didn't with my Leon playthrough. That was one of those things where it was like again, I know there's a weapon in there, and I know that like I can probably figure this out, but I'm gonna just get fucked a bunch of times trying to figure it out. So I'm just not going to. But I agree, like being able to manipulate some of the objects to make them change form or find something inside of them. Everything feels like kind of like tactile. It's like really satisfying how like dials turn on puzzles and stuff like that. So yeah, good stuff. I mean, it's not like a major part of the game, the way that puzzles would be in a lot of games. They're more like locks than there's a couple like puzzles that you have to figure out. And those, like you said, are kind of the right level of complexity where like, I needed to think, but I didn't need to check a guide. And that's like, that's the sweet spot.
Yeah. I will say the chess piece puzzle when you're in the sewers pissed me off really badly the first time I played it. Cause there's it like blocks. So you pick up a thing out of the lock and then it closed down a gate. I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. So, but that probably was a me problem.
that was another one where it was like, oh, the chess pieces close doors. Well, I guess I'm not going in those doors cause I need this piece elsewhere.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Again, spent half the time that you did playing it. So the picture is starting to get revealed here. All right, so before we get into housekeeping and then that spoiler section, let's answer the final question of the non-spoiler section. Guys, who would you recommend RE2 Remake to? Jerry, I will kick it to you first.
I would say that RE2 is for sure, without a doubt, if you're a fan of anything to do with horror, like it is, there's no excuse to not have this. This should be at your top priority of a game to own. But also besides people that like horror, I still feel like, and Dave, you're kind of a shining example of this. You're like the poster child of I don't like horror, and now you like horror.
Yep.
Because you said forever, you've said to me before, you were a very long time going, I'm not playing horror games. I don't like them.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
I do feel like Resident Evil has, and specifically Resident Evil 2, yes, it's very, very fucking scary. If you cannot handle that at all, it's probably not for you. But if you can handle some jump scares and some kind of tense situations, like you should definitely check it out because it's just it's a really good adventure to go on. So if you're into like some really high end like acting and just like set pieces and you want to see like basically a blockbuster movie realized in a form of a game and you want to be a part of it, that's your ticket right there.
Yeah, I would follow up the same with Jerry. That this is 110%. I think it's on two parts. If you are at all a horror or a survival horror fan, a Resident Evil 2 Remake is a must play. That is undeniable. That is irrefutable. And if you like Resident Evil, if you're like maybe, you know, a younger generation, maybe Resident Evil 7 and 8 might have been your first experiences, and you're like, wow, I really love this. If you have any desire whatsoever to go back and try to attach to maybe some of the lore, understand where these games all started from, Resident Evil 2 Remake, you know, you owe it to yourself to go back and check it out because you're starting to see the formula. You start to see how Capcom has developed so far since then. And I think that, again, you know, there are just so many elements to this game that make it such an incredible, you know, game. I mean, this should have been on the list for Game of the Year. People should have been arguing for this in 2019. I can't even remember what won that year or not. That was a weird year for video games, I think, for the most part. But regardless, I think that if you, again, two parts here, if you want something that's just super high quality and you're a fan of Capcom and Resident Evil, but also love survival horror, Resident Evil 2 Remake needs to be on your list.
Sekiro won Game of the Year in 2019.
That's right. That's right.
Do you think they deserve Sekiro a lot? I think Sekiro is really good. I think this is a better game than Sekiro, but I like Sekiro a lot. I'm not going to shit talk it on this podcast. not until I replay it and maybe find some things to critique. There's plenty to critique there.
Sure. But
anyway, you guys really covered most of the recommendations that I would say for this game, so I don't need to repeat it. The other part that I would add is if you are out there kind of like taking note of how much the video game industry is obsessed with remakes and remasters now, and you want an example of a remake done really well, at least from my perspective as someone who has watched like a decent part of RE2, the original, just on Let's Plays, like this seems like a very good remake. Like just it goes up there, the shining example with RE4, another incredible remake, and Resident Evil 1. Like every one of these remakes that I play strengthens my like faith in whatever the fuck Capcom decides to do going forward yeah. with this series. Cause they just, and like, I have a feeling I'm going to like RE3 remake cause it's more of an action game. And like a lot of my frustrations with this game are probably not going to be a part of that game. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to play it sometime this year. It'll be on the podcast. But I just have like extreme faith in the direction that they're taking the series and how they're handling these remakes. And like, from what I hear, RE5 is a somewhat challenging game to remake. And then, whatever they choose to do with RE6, if they're just going to keep going, it's just like they have my trust that they're just going to keep putting out great games. Cause this is just really, really good. And, you know, again, reiterating, I had like big frustrations with some of the game design here, but that doesn't mean that I think it's bad in any way. Like I see what they're doing, just my own personal experience there. So those are the recommendations, pretty unanimous from us, that like there are lots of people who should play this, more people who should than people who shouldn't, I think. So let's do our housekeeping and then we'll get into the spoiler section. We'll begin the housekeeping section by having you guys talk about your podcasts, because two podcasts that I listen to all the time, two people that I was very happy to have come on for this episode. So let us talk about Friday Night Gamecast and Super Ghost Radio. So Nick, tell people about Friday Night Gamecast. Tell people what's going on the show.
Absolutely. So Friday Night Gamecast is a video game variety show hosted by both myself and my co-host Will. We just wrapped up season 2. One of our most recent mainline episodes was going to be our 2023 Game of the Year. And then I just recently posted a Patreon exclusive episode. It's been out on our Patreon feed for a while, but it's our Did You Hate It edition, which is an exclusive episode where we go back to a backlog oriented game and then play something from our histories that we definitely need to touch on. That one is about Half-Life 2. When you listen to FNGC Pod, it's going to be a lot of everything. We are very much more topical oriented podcast. So occasionally Dave will come out there, just like the one he did with Jerry, and talk about, you know, the history of video games or open world designs. And we do the similar thing over on the Friday Night Gamecast. And Will and I, we just have a lot of good time and we love taking deep dives into video games. We love talking about industry, rumors, predictions, kind of a grab bag of everything in the video game industry. And we're both super passionate and super fun. So we definitely would love you to check us out. If you want to reach out to us directly, you can find us over on the website, formerly known as Twitter, at FNGCpod.
Yeah, and I was a guest on an episode we did talking about Souls likes over there, and I kind of ate crow after that episode. I talked a lot of shit about the Lies of P demo, and then the actual game came out, and it was like everyone loves that game.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I'm happy really to be like wrong that. About it. So yeah. That was a fun episode. If there's another one that you would recommend people check out other than those two.
Yeah, of course, jump into the ones that Dave and I have done together so far. He jumped on a mini series that I did called Fireside Chats in that winter.
Oh, right. Between
2022 and 23. And we're able to talk about Disco Elysium, which is a game that I think Dave is willing to talk about anybody with, and deservedly so. It's an incredible
Anytime.
Game. But yeah,
Anytime.
We have... We have a new format of shows that are different episodes that we put out that I have really started to love. I kind of was focused on covering a lot of like the top games of last year, and those are the FNGC reviews. Kind of the last trio we did Spider-Man 2, Tears of the Kingdom, and Starfield, all really great episodes that I personally really enjoyed. And then I also put out a video essay on one of my favorite games of last year, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which is a bite-sized little episode. It's only 20 minutes. So if you need to know anything about that game, jump in there and let me know what you think about that.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And just reiterate that I really love listening to Friday Night Gamecast, and I get really excited when it pops up in the feed, and always happy to talk with you and Will when I get the chance. So a recommendation to check them out. And Jerry, same thing. Tell people about Super Ghost Radio.
So Super Ghost is myself and my two co-hosts, Greg and Beth. And it's just like a comedic and kind of lighthearted discussion of the highs and the lows of video games. It's kind of just what we want to play, what we are going to play, and what we are playing. We'll cover other stuff too, like the Nintendo Directs, when there's like the Game Awards and stuff like that. We'll kind of give a rundown. We did a pretty funny episode this year where essentially Greg predicted all the winners of the Game Awards before the Game Awards came out. So we basically like told everybody these are the winners of the Game Awards. So we do like stupid fun things like that. We also have a YouTube channel that's going to have some content going up this year, some really cool things, some cool collaborations with some other podcasters that you probably know. Mm-hmm. There's also a new show that's going to be coming out under our Super Ghost umbrella as well. More on that pretty soon. And check out the latest episode that Dave was on, which was one of the craziest things. I still can't believe that we managed to make that work. It's if you have, you know, like 4 hours of your time that you don't care for, you can take it in bite-sized pieces. But the last episode of last year for Super Ghost, I coordinated what I called the anti-Game of the Year Awards. And nice. I had some of my favorite people in the podcasting scene come onto this thing. We made our own award, and some of these awards were absolutely insane. And then each of us submitted what we felt like should be the winner of that, and then we just argued it to the death. And it was such a chaotic good time. And to this, as of right now, it is actually the top performing episode that that Super Ghost has done. Nice. So congratulations, Dave. You really brought it in. The Mad Elf was
all credit to the Mad Elf.
So yeah,
I'm gonna have to look for that when I'm at the store tomorrow.
Oh yeah, it's a wild ride, and
it is. Yeah, that was a great time.
Yeah, and honestly, like that kind of summarizes what Super Ghost is all about. It's kind of this chaotic, comedic video game podcast where we're just, you know, don't take us too seriously, because we sure as fuck don't take ourselves seriously. Like, we're not game right journalists. On. Like, we're just hanging out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other episodes in the Super Ghost back catalog that you'd have people go check out other than the anti-Game of the Year?
Well, just before the anti-Game of the Year, we actually did our actual real Game of the Year.
Right,
Which was more sensible. I won't say sensible, because we're never sensible, but it was a lot more sensible. And then actually one of the highest performing episodes that we have that a lot of people end up listening to is kind of the reason why we started podcasting in the first place, is because of Final Fantasy 14 Online. Our episode, I think it's like episode 5, 4 or 5. It's really early. And it's essentially how each of us started playing this thing, and then it just got out of control.
Yeah. As it does. Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, kind of echo what I said about Friday Night Gamecast. Like, I listen to Super Ghost Radio. Like you said, it's always a good time, fun time, lighthearted. You guys have great chemistry between the three of you on the show. So I recommend that everyone check that out too. Down in the show notes, you'll find links to Friday Night Gamecast and Super Ghost Radio. So you'll be able to check out those episodes we talked about. Both shows have a ton of other episodes too. I'm sure you'll find something you'll like there. For this show, you can support by doing the same things like we talk about every time. You can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, and probably other places too. The show's on YouTube now. You can go subscribe and like videos on YouTube. I'm going to do the whole YouTuber call to action thing. You can go do that. It helps people find this episode when they search for podcasts about Resident Evil. And if you want to join the Discord, you can feel free to do that. We have a really great community in the Discord server. Conversations about Resident Evil this week, I'm sure we would love to have you. If you want to support monetarily, patreon.com/realDaveJackson, as you heard about before the episode started. And finally, I have another podcast called A Top Three Podcast, which is just us doing top three lists and drafting fun things. We've done some movie recasting episodes too recently. We recasted The Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and I think we got some good casts going on. I think Danny DeVito is going to make a good Frodo.
Oh, so. Yeah. Let's go.
That is all of the plugs. We thank you all for listening up to this point. We're going to take a music break. And when we come back, it's going to be full spoiler time for Resident Evil 2 Remake. Okay, it is full spoiler time for Resident Evil 2 Remake. I'm joined by Nick and Jerry. They did not leave during the break. They're back, and it's time to talk spoilers. So we're going to start by talking about the Leon playthrough, then we'll talk about the Claire playthrough, and then the ending you get when you complete both of them. So starting as Leon, we already talked about like the first memorable moment, but I want to reiterate how jarring and scary it was when Mr. X first makes his full entrance. So like a helicopter crashes into the police station and you spend some time, you got to do a puzzle to like put out the fire and all that stuff. And then, or maybe that's before, I can't remember, but you go inside, you're like, finally, the fire's out. I might be able to get past this helicopter. Mm-hmm. Nope. Cause Mr. X just lifts that shit up with one hand and then starts chasing you around.
It's a beautiful, that, such a memorable moment too. It's a great moment. And you're just like, what?
Yeah.
it's something also, it's just like them doing storytelling, telling you without saying anything, how strong he is, what an imposing figure he is. And you can tell like this guy is different as soon as he shows up on the scene and he's lifting up a helicopter with one hand. You're like, oh,
as soon as he starts lumbering toward you, you're like, oh no, no, fuck no. There's no way I have to deal with this right now.
Yeah.
Like there's too many things going on. Now I got to deal with this guy. This is too much.
Yeah. I was laughing. Nick, your cat is going wild.
She does this. She like runs up and down. I apologize. I don't know if you can hear that or not.
I can't, but in case it comes through in the local recording, the one I'm going to use, I'm for sure not cutting out cat sounds from the podcast. But I was like talking about Mr. X and your cat's doing zoomies in the background. I was like, that's fucking, I love it. So there are a couple of story moments that I guess I want to talk about, but they both happen after the police department. Is there anything specific from the police department, at least the first time from Leon's playthrough, that you guys think is noteworthy?
For me, it's always the helicopter thing. That's the one that stands out.
Yeah.
I would say that like it's a couple things. I mean, I really, really loved Leon and Claire's interaction when they're at the gas station. You know, you realize she's just the wrong place at the wrong time, and immediately Leon's there to kind of come to her defense. And, you know, they have this very brief exchange in the cop car leading up to like Raccoon City, you know, the city itself. And it's like, you know, you ask yourself this question. We've seen enough zombie content at this point. It's like, do you go into a city center when there seems to be some type of viral outbreak right outside outside of the city. I don't know about those choices.
I know I do every single time.
It doesn't make sense to me, but I'm sure maybe the situation is different, especially if I was a cop. But yeah, going in there, I really liked their very brief dynamic where they're kind of flirtatious. They're very, very, he's honestly very stoic and she's very charming. And they go in there and you kind of immediately like both of these characters, and you go in and you kind of, and it's just different moments of Leon trying to like grapple with the situation and get an understanding of what he really needs to do. I think the biggest thing prior to Mr. X showing up is him coming to a realization with Marvin, Lieutenant Marvin, and them talking in the hallway, and you see this like character, and I really loved him, especially his entrance. And if I'm not mistaken, he does show up before Mr. X, am I right?
Marvin, the very beginning of the game, you go in that side wing, yeah, and then you're kind of,
he slams
trying to
the
get,
gate on a zombie.
Yeah, he pulls you out and then slams the gate on the zombie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I really love the idea of, he says something to Leon directly. He, and it's kind of like Capcom talking to the player as well. And he says, Leon, don't make the same mistake I did. Badge or not, if you see one of those things, don't hesitate or run. And that's a really, really good piece of advice for anybody kind of thinking about just top level how you're really supposed to play this game. Because realistically, unless it is down to the wire and you have to return to this place or you cannot get through a certain area, you really shouldn't be shooting at these things. You really should just be moving around them as much as humanly possible and conserving as many resources as you can. I definitely had a really good time, like, you know, seeing that scene and seeing like Leon unpack and him trying, you know, saying yes, sir, and addressing and him coming to the realization after he's put on all his armor, what he needs to do. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. I think there's two spoilers for me that stick out a lot. One of them is right after the police station, and it is with the very creepy man that has a child kind of held captive.
Kendo.
And that. Yeah, that whole segment is fucking wild.
Mm-hmm.
It was unnerving more than dealing with the zombies on a much more psychological level.
Yeah, for people who didn't play, as soon as you leave the police station, you find a gun store, and I think you're there with Ada. It's when you get out of the parking garage with mm-hmm. Ada.
Yep.
And yes. You find this gun store, and there is a guy in there, and he's like, he doesn't want you in there, even though you're a cop and like a super spy, basically. He's like, you get the fuck out of here. Like, I don't care what's going on. Get out. And the reason he doesn't want you in there is because his daughter was bit and has... like, she looks like a zombie. It's not like she just got bit like an hour ago. Like, she's gonna go anytime now. And I think it's Leon makes a comment to her basically like, hey, you should probably take care of that.
That's
something
Ada.
Like that.
Ada says she's really gung-ho about we need to eliminate her. And Leon's like, it's just a kid. You know, that's a good moment.
Like the naivety of Leon mm-hmm. at this point as a character.
Yeah. And then it's immediately following that, you know, Kendo, it's like, you know, I don't care what's going on here. I need the two of you to leave me alone. Just leave me the hell alone. And he leaves the room and they wait a beat and they hear a gunshot.
Yeah.
And then Leon makes that comment. Like, what are you doing? Because Ada had previously introduced herself as an FBI agent. Like, she's like, I have this scene under control. You don't need to be here. You need to stop asking questions. And he's like, for us to work together, this is what I'm here for. I need to know mm-hmm. what to do. And I thought that was a really powerful scene.
Yeah. And I noted this scene too, also, because when I think of Resident Evil story, I think of, you know, plot twists and backstabbing and fucking like, you know, monsters and several different varieties of virus and, you know, over the top stuff, campy shit. But then like Resident Evil 1 remake has one like really sad, like well-written storyline.
Talking about Lisa?
With Lisa. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. And then Resident Evil 1 remake, because Lisa's not in the original.
No.
And then this game has this scene, which is like, compared to the stuff going on with the kid in Claire's storyline, like, this is, maybe you'll see a scene like this in other zombie media. Basically all of them will do something like this, I think. But I think this was really well done. It's a really short scene, but it's like,
it's executed flawlessly. Yeah,
done really well. Very different from what came before and what comes after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see like the human element a lot in Resident Evil stories, but this,
it made you care about
that.
The, like, a character very fast, like very quickly, you're like, oh, I feel bad for this child. And then it's just like, oh no, like, this is awful, man. Like, this is some terrible shit. And you just feel the weight of that whole situation.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you've spent so much time in the police station seeing how the police were handling this. And then you, after this, you go to the lab and you see, like, you know, what Umbrella's doing. But this is like your one glimpse into, like, the people out on the street and, like, how they're handling all of this, what they're going through.
Yeah.
I guess, like, I forgot like the order these things happen in, but there's two set pieces that I think are like pretty cool in theory. And I really hated in execution. One of them is when you're down near the parking garage, like in like the jail area, it's real dark. It's got the dogs. Like, it's a pretty scary area. And then at the end, you turn on the power and it opens up all the jail cells and all the zombies come out of the jail. And then Mr. X comes in too.
Yeah, that was insane.
Well,
hated that.
Yeah.
Really difficult. I died many times because I just couldn't. You can't fight your way out. Like, those are situations in other video games where you fight your way out, but you can't. You have to go around the side. You have to juke Mr. X. You have to, like, juke out a couple zombies. And I just, like, kept getting caught.
I died a lot there, too.
Yeah, it's tough. The other one that I wrote down that I hated is the crocodile sewer chase, the Crash Bandicoot section. I really didn't like that because I didn't know what the game wanted me to do, and I just kept dying repeatedly.
Yeah, I loved the crocodile because of how stupid it was. I just,
it
like,
is stupid.
It's very silly, and it definitely, like, it has a miasma of 1990s like video game play, like, design into it. And it's like, I'm glad that they didn't take it out. It, you know, it's in the game. You just have to, like, deal with it. Like, you can't really get around it at that point. But I love that they not only did it in Resident Evil 2, but they have its own version in Resident Evil 3 with a different different monster that's in that game. So it's very, very enjoyable to that extent. But yeah, it's just like a little bit of cheese, a little bit of camp before they get into kind of some of the real horror elements in that sewer section.
Yeah. Jerry, was that in the original? Do you remember that crocodile thing? It had to have been, right?
I think it is, yeah. It's been a long time since I played the original, but okay. I feel like it is.
Like you said, Nick, that's a very, like, 90s ass video game thing. So I would bet that it was.
Yeah.
And when they're remaking it, they're like, do we cut the crocodile? And they're like, no, it's goofy as hell.
Keep exactly. So it's like, they're self-aware to that extent. It's just, you go to one side, go to the other, try not to get chomped, shoot the gas pipe. It's fun. It's a little,
and then just layer the Crash Bandicoot theme over top as you're trying to run
away. It's weird. You're collecting mangoes for some reason.
Leon's spinning around, busting through crates.
Yeah, busting through piles of trash in the sewer. Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's the same thing as Resident Evil 4, though, Dave. I mean, you just randomly have a little Sea-Doo at the end of Resident Evil 4, and, like, the entire mountain that you're underneath is just blowing up around you, and it's like an 80s action movie. It's the same thing, maybe a little bit.
It is the same thing.
Less well executed.
In the original RE4, I didn't like the jet ski part either.
Oh, I died so much.
Yeah, it's really hard. in the original RE4, the part where the statue is chasing you, that's my shit.
Oh, that's amazing. That was amazing. You can't not have that. That was one of the reasons, like, that's an example of, like, when they took the camp out of the game and you were sad it wasn't there anymore. Because I was waiting for my Salazar statue scene and it just wasn't coming. But needless to say, that's okay. Still here, I think, to the effect, it was really, really good.
What did you guys think of the Ada section in Leon's playthrough?
Oh, I loved Ada so much. I'm sorry. I've been talking a lot, Jerry, so I want you to kind of give your
it's
input on this one.
It's all good.
I love her so much. She's such a manipulator. She's such a manipulator in this, and I love that she's so toxic to Leon so much. And then, like, they have a kiss scene later on when you're going down into the thing, and it's like, there's no reason that that needs to be in there, but she's like actually manipulating him to get, you know, what she wants, obviously. And it's very clear as you play through this from the outset that there's no real, at least no imagined romantic interest on her end. But I think that it was very fun. I liked how they introduced her, though. I think that her back and forth with Leon, and her being very confrontational, very mysterious at the beginning, and her kind of trying to front as an FBI agent, I liked it. It just gave me the feeling of a early 2000s blockbuster movie, exactly like Jerry has said a couple of times here. But I think Jolene Anderson did a wonderful job portraying her, and I'm really bummed that they didn't bring her back for four, but it's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I liked Ada's voice actor in four. Did you guys play the DLC?
Separate
for
Ways.
Resident Evil 4 remake?
Loved Separate Ways.
Yeah. Damn, was that good.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. No, Ada's cool. I like Ada. For some reason, though, like, as much as I like Ada, her segments never really stick out that much for me. I don't know what it is.
Really?
Like, it's not, no, it's not, it's never the thing that I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, this is the part for me. For me, it's always the stuff that just goes over the top. Mm-hmm. When shit is, like, hectic and then it goes over the top, that's the stuff that sticks out for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think people might criticize Ada's presence in this game as being, you know, inherently sexualized, as they're right to do. There's no reason that she needs to be wearing a red cocktail dress. They don't even give you a flavor text that she was attending some type of like event or something like that before the, you know, main events of the game started. So it's just, she's a little bit objectified in this game. So that, you know, that is something that you have to note. However, I still think that one of my favorite parts about this is the fact that several times throughout this game, both with Sherry as well with Ada, you have a perspective change. And I love it when you're in a situation and you're used to playing a character and then they strip you of all of the things that you know that you need to do. I think that like Ada's gameplay at the end, when you're kind of in that lab area, or you're trying to get towards that lab area or through that sewer section, it's all kind of smushed together there at the end. But her gameplay at that point, it's not the most well-designed. It is a little bit wonky. It's not very easy for the player to kind of figure out, oh, I have to scan the wall here to unlock the thing there. Like, you're probably going to die a couple of times, and I hate having to do that if it's your first time ever playing or you're not using a guide. But I still think overall that her presence in this game was really fun, and it was a surprise to me because I had no idea that she was here. My only understanding was that she was Leon's love interest in four, and that, you know, and then to see her come in here, I was like, my eyes and my ears perked up because I was like, oh, it's a famous Resident Evil character. This is so awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the character of Ada. I like her, like, as a contrast with Leon. Like, Leon's kind of, he's new basically. Mm-hmm. And Ada's a professional.
She called him a rookie.
You can tell. Yeah. Yeah, you can tell she doesn't really think much of him, but kind of a begrudging respect grows as the game goes along. And then it makes sense. Now, again, recontextualizing like how Ada shows up in Resident Evil 4 and her and Leon are like, oh, you again, you know, mm-hmm. And it makes sense how it is that way after the story goes. There's a Mr. X section when you're playing as Ada that I thought was, you know, pretty fun, like, nice horror game moment where you're kind of scrambling, like,
yeah,
trying to like lock this door, and he's like walking right toward you, and I'm like, you see the bar on like the scanner thing like slowly filling up, you're like, come on, let's do it, let's lock it, and then you finally get it in time and then like make a quick escape. I like that section. I think it's pretty divisive, like, as far as parts in this game, it feels like that's the most divisive part is playing as Ada, because she's only got like a couple of guns.
Yeah.
You're doing very video gamey puzzles that doesn't really bother me. This is a video gamey ass game the whole way through. So in the sewers, we can talk about the sewers. I mainly think that the boss fight against Annette's husband is really fun. Like, as one of those boss fights where, like, you're pretty resourced up when you start, and then it just keeps going and going and going until you start to panic about how many bullets you have left. And I think that there's some kind of adaptive difficulty going on where they're trying to make you feel that way regardless of how many bullets you start with, or how well you're doing or something like that. I thought that was pretty fun. And I love the beginning of the body horror down here in the sewers.
Yes.
Where, like, what I think it is like virus is in like the sewer system or whatever. And so any dead bodies or organic tissue or whatever can then be like corrupted by the virus, I think.
It could be some of that, but I don't know if you picked up some of the VHS tapes when you're later on in the labs, but they reveal some of what the SWAT team, or I think it might have been the assault team that Umbrella sent in to acquire the G-Virus did, and they shoot Birkin, and then you see a perspective at the end there where there are rats that are nibbling at maybe a little bit of G material that was let down there. So in my idea, I think it's first of all, the rats probably is what started the spread of the plague. And then it was, and those, they're just mutated forms that you see down there as well.
Well, if that's the case, I'm glad that they take on these kind of like amorphous, you know, blob creatures like down in the water, you know, rather than like, you know, fighting a giant rat like in Dark Souls 2 or something like
that.
Fucking Rat King.
Yeah. And they're also, they talk about it in different diaries that you pick up or different emails that you look at. You see the experimentation that both Annette and William were doing on humans for the G-Virus and what they were doing, the brutal things that they were doing to these poor test subjects that they were experimenting on, like, you know, leveraging people's relationships with each other to see how the mutation would affect them later on, or how that might result in them being more resistant or not to the virus. It was really twisted and dark, and I love that. But this is a little bit of headcanon, but I don't necessarily know if all of those test subjects were tracked. And three, you know for a fact that the people who were experimenting in the city released the gammas in that sewer system when you're in Resident Evil 3 remake. And so those were actually purposefully utilized as bioweapons because I said, this is spoilers for 3. I guess maybe you should cut that out. I don't know if that's a good thing or not for me to put that here, but
yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. If you're in the spoiler section of 2, you probably know about 3 also. So,
yeah, or living life, you know, on the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One other fun note about the sewers, and this has almost nothing to do with, you know, horror or the real story or anything, but there's that chess piece puzzle that you do, and not even about the puzzle, because like the puzzle, it took some trial and error. We'll say that. But there's a note you read from the company that designed the Raccoon City sewers, and they have like this chess pun going on with their name or something like that. Like, I don't know, King and Pawn Sewer or some shit. But there's a note, and it's like they talk about how, you know, how we talked about how the police station used to be a museum. So they explain away all of the weird, puzzly, video gamey shit by saying, like, this used to be an art museum. That's why everything's wacky in here. Well, down in the sewers, they do the same thing. It made me laugh so much when I read it. There's a note you read, and it's like, here at King and Pond Sewer, whatever the fuck they're called, we believe in two main things. We believe that sewers should be efficient, and number two, we believe that they should be fun. And I was like, what? The sewers need to be fun?
Oh, yeah. You got to make it fun, you know?
Exactly. So that's why we have all these, like, that's why you have 6 fucking circuit breakers and all the spark plugs have chess pieces on the end of them.
You know, Dave, the children yearn for the sewers at the end of the day.
Yes, they do.
So something that, yeah, it was the puzzle for me when you're going to get the spark shot. That's the one that frustrated the hell out of me, if that wasn't clear enough. Because there are two different sections where you use it, and there's one where it's mainly like the... there's a section where you can go a little bit deeper. Like when you have to go down there in the water, and then those lesser G monsters are down there and they're, you know, trying to, and then they poison you. Or if they actually hit you, unless you're, you know, good enough to kill them before they got close. That was really good. And it was also really cool because it gave you this like Jaws feeling. Whenever you are put in water, it's just like human beings just immediately have an innate fear of like what they can't see or don't understand. But like these lesser G monsters also spit out little viral like implantation like versions of themselves, and you can see them swimming in the water. And I can't necessarily remember if they attack you. Guys, remind me if I'm wrong or not, but it's just even seeing them do that was like, oh my god, I have to get out of here as soon as possible.
I think I remember them jumping out. They do try and attack you, but those, the little ones and the big ones, those were both emergency, like use your good stuff, use your good ammo. Because you've got to get past that.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you have to go do that puzzle. That's how you get one of the chess pieces is down there.
That's right.
And when I was playing as Claire, I ignored the spark shot because I didn't have inventory space. And when I got through that, when I got through that section and got back to the save room, I thought about, because I didn't kill many of those monsters down in the water because I was trying to save my fire grenades or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I thought about, I was like, do I really want to go back down there and get this other weapon? Like, this grenade launcher is so fucking good. And I decided, no, actually, I'm not going to. And I didn't. I just moved on.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever got the spark shot either.
Really?
Interesting.
So from a strategy standpoint, the spark shot is incredibly powerful, both against those G monsters, if you're trying to just like get back out of there, as well as when you're fighting Birkin. My strategy, and I was lucky enough to not get hit when you're fighting on the, on basically the crane fight that you have against Birkin, and he's like, you know, he traps you in the room and you're able to escape out of that area. I combined the spark shot along with the SMG, or the Mac 11, excuse me, along with the rocket, the grenade launcher, and just alternating between those three things to both stun him, light him up, and then just empty a clip in him, I was able to be untouched. And that's such a fun fight. It's such a good feeling whenever you're able to conserve your resources and kind of just alternate that and just disassemble these bosses.
Yeah, the Claire playthrough felt, once I got out of the police station, felt, no, even in the police station, because we didn't even talk about the crafting, but like you pick up the gunpowder and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I just used the gunpowder to make acid rounds basically every time I picked it up.
Yes.
And so
that is a strat.
Yeah. I had just so much grenade launcher ammo that, you know, six zombies standing in a hallway, no problem. Like all those things that gave me trouble when I was Leon, like, it's as close to a power fantasy as you'll get in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that ruled. And yeah. So like, I guess let's walk it back to what Claire does, like that Leon doesn't do. Claire meets a little girl. I think in the police station, she's hiding somewhere.
It's your first encounter with Birkin. Once she makes it down to the sewers for the first time, she like moves a shelf to the side and she sees this girl.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So she's down in the sewers. And whereas Leon does a bunch of police station and a bunch of sewers, Claire has this little side thing with this orphanage.
Yep.
And it turns out that the little girl's mom, I wrote her name down, Sherry, that's her name.
Sherry.
Her mom is Annette, who's like the head researcher for Umbrella working on the G virus. And of course, and her dad is that kind of like brute boss that you fight.
Yeah.
When you first get down. Yeah. Down into the sewers. That's right. Birkin. That's his name.
Good, I was thinking of Billy Birkin. The
chief. Yeah. And I'm curious if you guys know. So yeah, Chief Irons. probably one of the scariest things in this game. I thought Chief Irons. Absolute piece of shit. I wasn't aware, or I couldn't necessarily piece together, because it had been so long since my Leon playthrough, about how much exposure Leon had to Chief Irons. I know you go through his office and you probably pick up things for him, and you realize you read some of his flavor text of him being just a complete psychopath, but you don't get that full scope of how bad he is until you play as Claire, and it's just it's bad.
Yeah, that whole section is relentless too. Like, it is unnerving in ways that you're not ready for. Like, up to that point, it's just like, you know, you're going through this game and it's like, cool, shooting zombies and stuff. It's more of like body horror and like zombie horror and just like full-blown horror. This is like psychological horror. Like, it's like, it gets in your head and you're just like, man, fuck this guy. This guy's such a piece of shit. He's menacing. He's fucking chasing you around. I remember the segment, like, when you have to like sneak around and stuff in the orphanage.
Yep.
That was so fucking tense.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Playing as Sherry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like that idea that you're, you know, these two capable heroes with Leon and Claire, and they're able to handle the situations, even though it is scary, but then you're just this helpless little girl. And there's this angry big guy that's stomping around the room. Again, he has like that similar feeling of his movement has that like weighty impact the same way that Mr. X does. And yeah, that's just, and also it's the orphanage is inside of this like old renovated church. Again, incredible setting. It's so creepy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the way that they do like the perspective swap to Sherry works better in this than when they do a, like the swap to shit,
Ashley
from Resident Evil. Yeah. Like, that's still a cool part in the remake. It sucked kind of hard in the original, but like, yeah, the Ashley stuff is like, it's not bad in Resident Evil 4 remake, but I think the way that they pull it off with Sherry in this is a lot more effective, of just like that helplessness.
Yeah. So I think I have this in the right order. The first time you meet him is when you finally, you rescued Sherry. You're bringing her out of the parking garage.
Yes.
And then, the police chief, like, kind of holds you up at gunpoint and takes her away, and like knocks Claire out. And then you go up in his office and there's a lore note up there where he's talking about how he wants to fuck his taxidermied animals in his office. Like, he's talking about how attractive they are.
Yeah, he's
not good all around.
Yeah, no, he's really, it's very perverted, in terms of like, there's a lot of perversion in the way that he's handling those animals. It's like a big control thing. Him being able to like control and manipulate those things. It's very classically, they're playing into that psychological horror, is that he has this control, this power trip issue, and you can easily see that in the way that he's interacting with both Claire and Sherry in his first encounter, because he's calling like that little girl like a dumb little bitch, excuse my language, but like, and then he's like grabbing Claire by her hair and shoving like the gun in her throat and threatening her life so Sherry does what he wants. Like, it's very gross. It feels bad. And then you realize that like you're picking up the notes. And it's the notes of like, he's like, I skinned a deer. I'm getting tired of these little animals. And then he talks about, oh, I found a pig in a city. I recovered a pig in a city today. But you look at like, he writes down descriptive information and it was like 22-year-old female.
And yeah, this dude's got like fucking Buffalo Bill vibes, man. Oh,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He is definitely tucking his junk between his legs, throwing on some lipstick and dancing in front of a mirror.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, he's a real sicko, and not in the good way that we use it on this podcast. He's a real piece of shit. And then, so like, that's happening, but Sherry's been kidnapped by him. So you're like, ah, oh, fuck, what is he doing? And then, yada, 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 you find out that what he's doing is he's giving the children at the orphanage to Umbrella for testing, if I remember right, which is because he has an agreement with Umbrella that he lets them do whatever they want in the city, and they kind of, you know, give him a little something, something too. So he ends up becoming the villain. I was expecting Wesker because Resident Evil, but he's like the ultimate villain of this story. I feel like, you know, scientists working in the lab, they can be villains too, but he's like the, if you got to pinpoint one that's like doing the most heinous shit, it might be this guy.
It's 100%. Yeah, it's 100% Chief Irons.
You can almost give the scientists a pass and be like, they're just doing what they're doing because they're like, it's for science. I didn't know. This guy fucking knew what he was doing.
I don't know. Some Annette of them is a could. Pretty big piece of shit.
Leave the scientists alone. Leave the scientists alone. They did nothing wrong.
And then the final part of this that I made sure to write down, because it's super fucked up, is so the G-virus monster that you fight is Sherry's dad again. The one that you fight playing as Leon. And I think he busts into the Chief's like experiment room when you're playing as Sherry too, and kind of wounds him. And you find a lore note that the G-virus monsters, as the virus progresses, they get reduced down to primal needs, like the primal needs to feed and to reproduce. And they say that in order to reproduce, they will seek out hosts with genetic code the same as their own, which means they're going to seek out their children or their parents, I suppose. And then after that, you find Sherry and she's infected. And you're like, oh, something bad is going to happen to her if we don't fix this. So there's some very fucked up ideas happening within the story of the virus in this game.
That's crazy. I didn't put that together in either of my playthroughs, but it makes perfect sense. That's a piece that I just couldn't connect. I was like, how did Sherry get infected? Because it happens off camera. It does happen off camera, but
it happens off camera. Yeah.
I wasn't sure how that happened, but oh, that's just awful.
There's definitely some really, really unsettling incestual stuff being kind of alluded to. With that whole situation. Pornhub would be very happy, actually. They would, you know,
the Pornhub Resident Evil section. Yeah.
the tyrant is stuck in the washing machine again, or the drying machine again.
Yeah. Let's see. And then so after this is the lab section. Actually, before that, real quick, I thought it was very funny and extremely Resident Evil that you're down in the sewers. And down in the sewers, there's a cable car that takes you several miles below the surface of the earth.
Yeah.
Very Resident Evil.
No, I love that. You got to have a little bit of technology in your sewers, you know, Dave? It's got to be fun. You have to have a ride.
Yeah, it's fun. It's the design ethos of the sewer company is it's going to be fun. Exactly. We're going to have cable cars. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So I love the lab section in this.
Yes. I always like the lab sections.
It's got really memorable encounters. There's the part where you're kind of sneaking through. There's a bunch of zombies that are either like asleep or they're eating or something. And then two clickers drop down from the ceiling. That's The Last of Us. Lickers.
Lickers.
Yep.
Drop down from the ceiling. It's got the cafeteria where you go in right at the beginning. And there's like an automatic broadcast saying like, here at the Umbrella Corporation cafeteria, We pride ourselves on meeting all of your nutritional needs, and it's playing as a zombie's eating another zombie, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing.
And then you've got the body horror with the plants, which I think is just great. Anytime you mix like plant and human body horror, that's like immediately like gets to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm a little bit the opposite direction. I didn't care for the plant zombies as much. I was just like, yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. I just didn't feel like as much as, and also this was my first experience with the later, like the end stage zombies of a Resident Evil game. I also didn't like that they're basically crimson heads. They just don't die. They just keep getting back up until you can administer that, the serum into the like dispensary system so that they can spray it down so you can get the car to move on.
I never thought of it that way. They kind of are like, in a way, the crimson heads.
I mean, the way to kill them permanently is to burn them.
Right.
Which is like the crimson heads too. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny that in RE1 and in this game, you spend a little bit of time making a plant poison.
Yeah,
just part of both games.
That's awesome. That's incredible. Yeah, I really enjoy this section. Yeah, any time where it's like it's anachronistic, right? Because you feel like you're taken back in time playing as Claire and Leon in RPD. It's like, because it's got that historic, nostalgic, cultural feel, and then you have to get through the muck of the sewers, and then all of a sudden you're in this new, pristine,
shiny,
shiny, like sci-fi area. It does something like in the back of my brain that just clicks. And I like it's like you're saying, just plant. Especially. Yeah.
I like the plant areas too, because it's like kind of like when you go into those areas, it's kind of like jungly.
Yes.
And like you can almost feel the humidity.
Yeah. The botanicals. Right.
Yeah. It's just so crazy. Like,
yeah. And something I did want to touch on that's interesting, because you do encounter liquors in the labs. It's something that folks who are prospective players of Resident Evil 2 Remake that you would like to know about liquors, if you don't already know, is that you don't have to fight a single one in this game. You don't have to kill any of them. If you do not run around a liquor, they cannot see you. And if you don't shoot it, they can't find you. And it's very, very scary, because they move so fast and they hit so hard if they actually do hit you. And you have to be really, really careful. You can't even enter a room with a liquor or be in its general vicinity and be moving somewhat quickly. You just have to move in a straight line directly where they're going, and as long as you're doing it at a good pace and you're being kind of quick about it, they're not going to get you.
Yeah, there was a couple rooms where I didn't mess with them at all. There's the room with the statue in the police station where you like interact with the statue and then you turn around and a liquor falls through the ceiling or something like that. I just like got the fuck out of that room.
Yeah,
but when I was playing as Claire and I had the fire grenades, I took out all of my frustration from Leon's route on every enemy that I came across within reason.
Hell yeah.
In Claire's route. And when you're playing as Claire and you're down in like that parking garage area in the kennels, and there's like three of them in there. And I was like, nope, I'm burning all of these. I'm not sneaking through all these fucking things. This game makes you feel like a fucking king if you've got like 9 grenades.
Yes, so exactly.
Like, yeah, we're burning everything.
Yeah, you can't be stopped as long as you have a good stockpile of ammunition. And then acid rounds are just so effective in the lab area too, in terms of having a situation where it's like you're dealing with those things. And it's like, again, you shouldn't really kill them. You shouldn't have to fight them, but they're so effective at like melting them down or knocking them down and just like subduing them just long enough for Jill to go buy them and do what she needs to do.
Yeah, acid rounds, because the liquors don't have skin, so
right.
Acid rounds just get right to the point, I suppose.
Yeah,
I don't know, those tree zombies, like they're kind of annoying as enemies if you don't have fire to kill them, because like regular weapons don't do shit against them. But I don't know, something about plant and human body horror is very effective for me. Like just to, I don't know. Like anytime you read a story about, you know, horror with like vines going into people's bodies and shit, it's good.
So did the clickers in The Last of Us, I'm assuming those worked as well for you pretty well. Cause of the,
yeah. I mean, fungus.
Yeah.
Dave, body are you horror, physically good. Attracted to Poison Ivy from Batman?
Works on both opposite ends of the spectrum. I guess like down in the lab, you get like kind of the resolution for like the story. You meet Annette, and you have up in the sewers, you meet Annette, and then you have a lot more contact with her down in the lab. In Leon's playthrough, in both playthroughs, what's his name? William attacks again.
Yes.
And in Leon's playthrough, Annette tries to kill him by like sending him down into the pit where he is. In Claire's playthrough, she doesn't try to kill Claire. They just come to like an understanding, like, oh, you're injured, I'll go take care of it type of thing. But you do fight him. Oh, there's the other boss fight against him with the cargo container.
Yes.
Did you guys enjoy that one?
I love that fight. That was the one that I was talking about where I felt very, very strong. I felt both strongly in the final fight, basically his final form, fourth form, I think is what it was for his G mutation, as well as the crane fight where it's like I was going very, very fast and then just alternating between the spark shot, the grenade launcher, and the Mac 11. It's just, yeah. And then you slam that button, the thing goes, you subdue him, you slam it again, and then you're just emptying like the clip into him until it finally connects with him and just knocks him down there. So satisfying. Really, really love those fights. And then the one at the very end too with his eyes. That was one that something that I realized as I was reading different people online and their approach towards handling that boss fight, especially on like no damage runs. Doing that boss fight with the submachine gun, the Mac 11, is very risky because it's kind of hard to move and aim, and he's kind of fast at the end there. But that was another one where it's like using the acid rounds and the upgraded grenade launcher with a stock attachment to it is just so, so vital for like approaching that boss fight and handling him. And you can literally just dump at if you, because I saved all mine for that fight, you can just keep dumping that in there. And then the spark shot for those cluster of eyes in his chest at the end is so good. yeah
I think that final boss fight against him is another one of those where it's kind of adaptive, where like, because when I fought him as Leon, I was not stockpiled with ammo.
Oh, I died so many times.
Really?
It felt like it took most of what I had to take him down playing as Leon. I also didn't have the Magnum when I was playing as Leon, because there's a point where before you get on the cable car, you can go back to the police station. You can like clean up.
Yes.
And I didn't, because I was like, fucking Mr. X is in there. I'm not going in there.
He's not.
So I didn't, he's didn't not get the Magnum. Time. He's not in there.
Yeah, he's not in there.
Oops. But I didn't go in there. And it took like all the ammo I had playing as Leon, but I started with like half ammo in that fight. But I still got him down my first try. And then when I played as Claire, I was like stocked with ammo. Yep. And it still took basically everything I had. So I think there's some kind of adaptive health or something going on to get you in that kind of desperate, like, fuck, I got 3 bullets left. Like, this better happen soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah, 100%. It's a good boss fight, though. I like,
it's fun.
I hate when the last boss is kind of like a pushover and you're just kind of like, oh, really? That was the last boss? Like, when the last boss is like that and kind of intense and like has my hands sweating, that's what's up.
Yeah. I guess both final bosses for Leon and Claire are more cinematic than anything else. Like, maybe Leon's is a bit tougher, but that one against William is definitely like the most challenging of them. Leon's final boss is fighting Mr. X on an elevator, and it's another one that's kind of adaptive. Like, you have to hold out until Ada drops you a rocket launcher.
Yep.
And you can blow his entire torso off, which felt great. Cause I mean, I've already been over how I felt about Mr. X
and rocket launchers.
Finally. Yeah. At long last, I've been waiting to do this to you. Yeah.
Fucking suck on that. But I think it's either like, if you damage him a lot, you'll get to that point quicker.
Yeah.
But you can also just run out the clock and she'll give you, and that's what I did. Because I did not have a lot of ammo going into that fight.
Really? Yeah, that's really intense. I do remember, I love the Super X fight at the very, very end, because it's like, you know, for listeners, he's taken his shirt off and you can kind of see like his bone graft kind of mutating and half of his body is burned and then he's like glowing on one part of it and then he's on fire. It's just such a good scene, and you're like going downwards. Yeah,
say that X gonna give it to you.
X is definitely gonna give it to you
during that scene more than ever. Fail. Yeah,
yeah. He does this cool animation too, where you're fighting him and you're just like dumping ammo into him, and it's just like it doesn't seem like it's doing much. And he like yells at you, and then uses his claw as he swipes it down on the ground as he's rushing towards you. It's so good. I love that. I love that part.
Yeah, and then the final Claire fight when you get the minigun.
Yes.
Just I feel like. I'm almost glad that I did Claire second, because that moment when you pick up the minigun,
it's just so final. It's like the final thing. And it's just,
it is, like, it's like, is it's the final cherry on top of your, like your power curve, right? Yep. They're like, yeah, you get a fucking minigun. Have fun. You've earned it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
You've unlocked incredible. God mode.
The funniest thing about it too was, and Jerry, I know that you were thinking about this. You were talking about this moment earlier on in this section, but when you're in the cable car and the last thing you do in Claire's run is the last encounter with the Birkin final mutation G virus. And he's just this, he's somehow just this massive organism of like flesh and bones. And he's trying to infect the train that you're on. And you're just unloading the minigun ammunition. You get like 500 rounds and you're just like holding down the trigger button. It's so cool. But the craziest thing about it is that I didn't wait for his eyeball to pop up at the end there. As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, fuck this guy. And I just lit him up and like literally emptied all of my ammunition. And so I had to switch over to my Mac 11, which thankfully I had a stack of 200 rounds in there. So that was okay. But oh man, what a moment.
Yeah. It's such an epic part. That's definitely one of the big standout moments for me was just that cable car escape. And it's just, it just felt like, again, just to echo what I said before, it was like the end of that big, it was the big blockbuster ending that you wanted. It was just balls to the wall. Yeah. Fucking, this is it. This is the last stand. Here we go. Everything has just gone haywire. And I said before, things that stand out to me that are memorable are when things are over the top and then they get blown even more over the top. And that's like such a good example of shit just reaching this climax and then going, oh, but we could probably make this get crazier, right? Like we could probably make this go even more crazier, and they do it. And it's just like, holy shit, like one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. And yeah, like it's just, to me, it's the perfect way to end that game. Just all out, balls of the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I particularly like in the Leon A route, the fact that they make a very specific point of reminding you, hey, you beat this run, but this game is not done, because like he gets on the train and he and Claire are like smiling at each other and they're all happy. They're all relieved or on the way out. And then it cuts to black and then it cuts to the door and you see the G virus punch open the door and a little bit of it come out and then credits roll. And you're like, oh, okay, well, it's time to play the second run here. And so I really like that one final note that they kind of remind you, hey, let's get the true ending here. Right.
Yeah. And then, that true ending, yeah, after it is ridiculous. Like, it's like a screen filling mass of flesh that you fight. It's like trying to eat the back of the train, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like an eldritch monster.
Oh, yeah.
It's
and then, yeah, so taking wild. It out, super fun. Not that it's not difficult. Like, I don't even think you can die unless you try or something like that.
Well, but already kind of proven yourself with the other two bosses.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so
this is just like that. Yeah, this is just like the fireworks. The closure is just like, here you go. You've earned this. Here's exactly. This grand, insane finale for you.
Yeah. So after that, like the real ending is that Claire and Leon and Sherry walk outside after, you know, I'm not sure how this works. They're on a train like 10 miles below the earth, and then they emerge on the surface somehow. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Umbrella's express train or something like that. They need supplies down deep in the earth. And they have like this happy ending where they're walking outside together. They sure seem like they're about to start a life together as a family, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And walking it's so funny, Sherry's like, are you guys boyfriend and girlfriend? And they look at each other like knowingly, like, oh. And he's like, it would have been a pretty crazy first date, huh?
Yeah.
But like, then there's that other chick, Ada. She's kind of hot too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was wondering, because like, I don't know, very early on after they get separated, they meet again briefly, like there's a gate that's locked and like Claire's locked outside and Leon's inside and they stare at each other like a fucking high school couple.
Oh my God. It's so it's rain. Like they're literally just like eye fucking each other in that moment. They want each other so bad. And it's like,
yeah,
this doesn't happen. That's not real. Or is it? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, maybe they'll finally put them together in Resident Evil 9 or something.
I was going to say it's a bit fast. And then in Resident Evil 4, Leon doesn't mention Claire at all. Claire is not brought once. Up
old news
a single time. I don't know. I know Leon's in 6, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. I don't know the next game that Claire's in. What's she in?
You don't ever. I from my understanding,
Veronica.
I don't think she's in six. Like
Code Veronica.
I guess Code Veronica, would be the next canon thing that you're supposed to see Claire in, but she only ever pops back up in the movies. And don't ever watch the movies, Dave, because they're not worth your time.
Isn't she in one of the Revelation games? I think two.
Oh, those don't
Revelations
count.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell you.
I hope Beth doesn't listen to this because she loves Claire. By the way, I was supposed to say that she is a huge Claire advocate. And she's probably going to be very angry and she's going to be screaming and be like, she's in this and this and this and this. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, hopefully Beth's listening past the 3-hour mark in the podcast. Shout out to Beth if she is. Yeah. It really seems like it is really like the ending of a rom-com or something. Like they are ready to like start their life together. But this is Resident Evil and, you know, people can't have nice things. So I'm not sure what happens.
Right.
And I'm not playing the Revelations games or Code Veronica.
They're not bad. Revelations is good.
Okay. Maybe I will. Maybe I'm wrong.
Don't write them off.
I was on this podcast like 2 years ago saying I'd never play any Resident Evil game. So
that's true.
Here we are. Well, this has been a good time, guys. I appreciate you both taking 3 hours of your time to talk about the Resident Evil 2 remake with me. Great times. Thank you both so much.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. It's such a pleasure to be on here. And I'll talk about Resident Evil anytime you want. So thanks for having me.
You know I'm your horror guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some people on the podcast don't like to be typecast as the horror guest, but it seems like Jerry's cool with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm almost exclusive. Most times I'm like almost exclusively watching horror movies or playing horror games. So yeah, I'm super okay with being typecast as the resident horror guy.
All right. Resident Evil
get it
horror guy. Well, 3 hours into the podcast, the bad jokes have started, so we're going to call it here. Thank you guys again so much. Thank you everybody who's listening to the end. We appreciate you as always. One more plug for everyone to go down in the show notes while you're listening to the outro music. Check out Friday Night Gamecast and Super Ghost Radio. Lots of good stuff for you to find on both shows. And with all that being said, tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.
Resident Evil 23.
Well done.